If I could ask everybody to take a seat, please, and we'll call the meeting to order, please. Thank you, and welcome to the December 13th, 2011 Morro Bay City Council meeting. Let the record reflect that all members of council are present, and we'll begin, please, with a moment of silence. And if you would please stand and face the flag, we'll be led in the pledge by Mr. Eric Ensdersby.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome. Glad to see so many of you out tonight. I invite those in the standing in the back. There's plenty of chairs to find a chair if you wish. Standing is allowed as well. We're glad you all came. A couple of announcements. Now let's do this first. I would like to invite my fellow city council members down to the mic, to the podium, and ask Ms. Bridget Kessling if she would join us, please, and Andrea. I guess for the TV cameras, I'm going to have to turn my back to you, so I apologize for that. Hello, Bridge. Everybody knows Bridget, our city clerk. Bridget has been the city clerk for 19 years and been with the city for 26 years. She has probably one of the most difficult jobs in the city because she has six bosses. That constantly change. And she does her job so well, nobody has any idea what her politics are. She treats everybody the same. And she's fair and impartial always. And she has been a delight to work with because, except for my first month, Bridget came on the second month that I was mayor in 1993, we have worked together. She's a peach of a woman. We're so glad that she's retiring and going to go on and, you know. I meant that in a very, very positive sense. So I have a plaque, but I'm going to let each council member have a word here before we present this to her. So whoever would like to go next, step right up.
I wanted to thank you, Bridget, because running for office is not an easy thing. And as myself and I'm sure many others have found out, you are there with the knowledge and background, really help shepherd us through, try to keep us out of trouble with the Fair Political Practices Commission and all those other groups that want to make sure we follow the rules. And that was really appreciated because it is stressful. And as the mayor said, you've always been there to help us and the public access information, which is a very critical part of city government. So thank you and enjoy your retirement.
Bridget, I'm in total shock. I thought you were my boss. You, huh? She came on and I felt like she was my boss. What a wonderful job this lady has done. You know, and she's helped us a lot, just like Noah. But no use repeating just what he said. But we're going to miss her, and thank you very much for all the help you gave me. Bye. And good luck.
Gosh, they're taller than I am. Enjoy your trip to Mexico and all your other wonderful trips you're going to take. We will miss you terribly. And I want to thank you for keeping us all in line with all that paperwork. There's a lot of it, and you always know when things are due and what we need to do. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
Uh-oh. I know I won't do. I'm going to make this real short. otherwise, we won't get through it. Thank you for everything. It's a pleasure going in your office. I don't know who's going to do my homework. I hope Jamie knows how. Good luck.
Bridget, we're going to have a lot of goodbyes, I think, from now until December 30th. You've been great to work with, for, I should say, as my boss. Big shoes to fill, and looking forward to your retirement party on the 30th at City Hall from 2 to 4, open to the public. We'd love to have people come.
And it's my pleasure to now present Bridget with a plaque on behalf of the City Council and City Manager, celebrating her 26 years of service to the city of Morro Bay, and we love you, and we're going to miss you terribly.
Thank you so much. How incredible. However, I have to disagree. It's not goodbye. It's see you later, because I am a citizen of the city of Morro Bay, and you never know. I could be back at this podium anytime. It's been a great pleasure working with all of you. And a great pleasure working for all of you. And I'm rather speechless. However, I'm looking forward to this time to spend with my husband traveling. And but when we get back from Mexico, I have a feeling that I will have a part in something, but I'm not quite sure what that will be. But you'll see me. I will be involved with the city of Morro Bay. So thank you again.
Did I take my... there it is. A couple of announcements. The banners north of Beach Street, we have taken down for the time being. We've had a problem. They were so high, it was too expensive to change them out. And so until we have it figured out how we're going to change them out, we've temporarily taken them down. And the new banners on the waterfront will be here around. The new, brighter banners will be here around the 10th of January. I want to thank city staff for getting the holiday banners around town. We appreciate that. We certainly have dressed up the town for the holidays, and I'll start down with Noah.
Thank you. I would like to start by recognizing, as I'm sure many of you have in the community, the recent passing of Jane Bailey, who was someone that I never got the chance to meet personally, but have grown to know through many of her contributions, but most specifically Morro Bay's Yesterdays, which is an amazing book. If you have not had the chance to pick it up and read it, it's available at Coalesce and other bookstores online. But essentially, she has been just an amazing woman for our community, played a key role in helping to establish the Morro Bay Library, which was one of the first in the county, and was a lover of wildlife, the coastline, and obviously our history. Some of the fun things in here, they go all the way back to the earliest days before the settlers came into Morro Bay, and just amazing pictures. I was going to read an excerpt from it tonight, but I'll save you that. I know from the Morro Bay Volunteer Tree Committee, we've used this as a resource to look at historical photos of the forest, the urban forest, and its evolution, and then also as an inspiration for some of the parties that we've put together, as she described the parties that were thrown in Morro Bay in the early days, and trying to generate some of that community gathering and spirit. So Jane, she's left us a legacy and an amazing, priceless gift, which is a connection to our history, and she'll forever be alive in our hearts, I'm sure, and thanks to this book, in our bookstore. So take a look at that, and we wish her continued success, I guess you'd say. To follow up on that, we did have a very successful tree planting effort on December 4th with a volunteer tree committee and a number of our partners. It was down on the south Embarcadero, across the Embarcadero from Tidelands Park. We did about 42, 43 trees, mostly 15-gallon large trees, and our partners came out in full force. There was a lot of laughs. And just an amazing experience watching the scouts of different Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, and 4-H. These kids, there was a large mulch pile, bigger, taller than me and wider than me. And basically, the kids were able to move that, and with help from their parents and the tree committee, the teen advisory committee, the Rec and Parks, and the Gorilla Gardeners, we got all those plants in the ground mulched, gopher caged, and irrigated for within 3 hours. So it was just a really inspirational event, and I encourage anyone out there to get involved if they have kids that are interested in the outdoors or would like to learn more about the outdoors. Our local scout groups of all different areas are interested and would like to connect with you and offer an opportunity to get your kids out in the outdoors with great supervision and learning opportunities. So look forward to bringing them in for announcing their specific needs and offerings at a future date. And again, thank everyone that was involved with the effort.
Thank you, George.
Yeah, I want to thank everybody that took part in the boat parade. That was, I think that's one of the greatest events we do here in Morro Bay. And I want to especially give a thanks to the Coast Guard. Boy, they put on a show out there and really kind of saved the parade. I think it was outstanding. And just to look at these people's faces as they enjoy this parade, it's a whole different look than any other festival they come to. So I'm looking forward to this to be expanded and made better next year and the year after, because this is one wonderful event that we have, and it's one thing that Morro Bay can do that nobody else can around this area anyway.
One upcoming event, the members of the Morro Bay Beautiful and their friends will be riding the trolley on Thursday evening, December 15th, to present awards for the residential holiday decorating contest. There's still a little room on the trolley, so if you'd like to come with us, we leave the library parking lot at 4:30, and we ought to be back by about 6:30. You can call me at 772-3738, and we'll get you on the trolley. It's a lot of fun. Also, as liaison to Rec and Parks Commission, I went to their meeting last month. They voted to move forward on two items. One, we had discussed the path to the beach over the revetment there in the rock parking lot. And they also approved the painting plan for the Morro Bay Arts Foundation for the bus stop at City Park. That sounds like a really exciting thing. I hope we see it happen. The other committee I sit on is our City Economic Development Committee. We met last week, 8 o'clock in the morning, discussed some empty buildings in town and what we might do about it, incubator businesses and how those work, the variety of business support groups we have in town, and are looking forward to the January presentation from the EVC, which will is the County Economic Vitality Commission, and that will be focused on Morro Bay's economy. So please plan to be there. Also, just a special thank you to our police department for another wonderful Caroline Cops event. A lot of little kids got a lot of stuffed toys and had a wonderful time.
Thank you.
No, I have nothing to announce. Just wish everyone a Merry Christmas, and that's it.
Now we have two council members with afterthoughts. I'll go first. The bus stop that was just talked about will be on the first agenda in January. John, I'm kind of looking at you to pass that on to Nancy. We're going to get this forward, and I don't know if you've seen renderings, but it's pretty cool. So this is coming. Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I did want to invite the Public Services Director to give us a brief summary of the meeting with the Coastal Commission regarding the wastewater treatment plants, and considering our JPA meeting has been canceled for the public's benefit, a little bit of information and update, please.
Thank you. Councilman Smuckler, the Morro Bay city staff and Cayuga staff went to, along with our consultants, went to the Coastal Commission offices in Santa Cruz on Friday for a 2 p.m. meeting. Met for about an hour and a half going over the alternative sites evaluation, answered questions from the coastal staff, got some direction on where we may need additional work, and so we'll be preparing, we're in the process of preparing a memo to both the Cayuga Sanitary District Board and the City Council, which will be also put on our website for the public, that details out that meeting and where we're going from here. We will also be discussing that at our January 12th, thank you, 12th JPA meeting in detail. Thank you.
Thanks. Anything else? Closed session report, Rob?
There was no closed session.
There was no closed session. I thought maybe we were reporting on our last closed session. Okay, we're at the public comment period. I do have three people I'm going to invite up first, and then we'll invite the rest of you. Please state your name for the record. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes. If the buzzer goes off, we'd ask you to please bring your remarks to a conclusion. And I'd like to invite Carolyn Wichman of Karma Sunshine up first for our business spot. Good evening, Carolyn. Welcome.
Do I just speak up here? Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Just speak right in the mic.
Thank you very much for inviting me to come and speak. My name is Caroline Wichman, and I have a little shop at 875 Main Street in Morro Bay. It's called Karma Sunshine, 20th Century Collectibles. The shop is named after my daughter, Karma Sunshine. I'm a 60s child. So I have lived in Morro Bay for 7.5 years, and I have been into, worked in a lot of the consignment stores. And I decided that I thought it might be a better idea for me to just get a little shop, because every consignment store I was in, I was growing out of. So this shop opened up in September, and I jumped to the chance, and it's been interesting. I'm really happy that I have a shop, and, you know, I love living in Morro Bay, so this is going to be an interesting task for me. I know that any kind of, this is the first time I've ever had a shop, small business. I've worked retail and sold antique collectibles for the last 30 years, so I'm not afraid of my knowledge of the business. I'm just interested to know how this location is going to work for me. And I get a lot of comments from everybody that's on the street, how it's going and this and that. So, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful that that I'm going to be successful at this spot. And what we carry is everything that you grew up on in the last 20 years, 100 years. So, well, nobody's that old, I don't think, but, you know, 20th century stuff. So all the memorabilia and everything. And there are some new things, some new items in the store. We have a little bit of that. But 90% of the stuff is collectibles. And I'm just very thankful that you invited me to come and speak. Please come by my shop. Thank you.
Thanks for coming down, Carolyn. I'd like to invite Father Stephen Mills up. Father Mills is the new spiritual leader at our Episcopal Church, St. Peter's by the Sea, and we welcome him. Good evening.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. I just wanted to come by and introduce myself. My colleague and friend Harriet Linville retired after 15 years as the rector of St. Peter's by the Sea. And I saw her yesterday, and she's enjoying her retirement And I'm her fill-in while the church decides who they're going to call as their next rector. And so I just wanted to come by and say hi and to see all of you. I really like a city where the mayor wears a shirt like that. I think that's quite appropriate. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming down and introducing yourself, Stephen. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now if I could ask the Jesse King Memorial Paddle Race folk to come up and make their presentation. Good evening. Welcome.
Hi, Mr. Mayor, council members. I'm Matt Hudgens of Central Coast Stand-Up Paddling. This is Sue. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Sorry, I'm Sue Streben, Morro Bay resident of about 27 years.
And along with Herb White, Sue and I were the race committee for the Jesse King Memorial Paddle this year. It was the third year we held the event, and it's been a successful fundraiser dedicated to the junior guards. We've been raising money for scholarships and gear that they need, all in the interest of water safety. This year, on behalf of the Jesse King Race Committee Paddle, Jesse King Paddle Race Committee and the King family, we're honored to present a check to the Morro Bay Park and Rec Department for $1,500. In addition, we raised another $500. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Yeah. In addition, we raised another $500 for the county, for the Cayucas Junior Guard, which is run through the county of SLO. We couldn't have done it without the support of the community, all of our sponsors, especially the Harbor Patrol, providing safety and support, information. They've been absolutely priceless. And everybody that came out for the event, we look forward to doing it again next year as well. Latter half of October, I think we picked a weekend. Sue, would you like to add anything?
I'm remarkably astonished by how Morro Bay community supports all of its citizens, those who have passed on and those who are present with us. Jesse King was a waterman. He had worked for the Coast Guard here in Morro Bay. He worked with the Harbor Patrol and was a lifeguard and a true citizen of Morro Bay. He was so excited about finishing his education at Cuesta College and going on to Cal Poly. So it's a great honor for Matt and I to continue working to see Jesse, a Morro Bay citizen's goals and aspirations, see reality. So thanks once again to all of you for your time.
Yep. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Okay, now it's your turn. If you'd like to speak to us on a matter other than the public hearings, now is the appropriate time. If you're here for the Cerrito Peak issue and you cannot stay for the public hearing, you're welcome to speak to it now, but we would ask that you don't take two bites of the apple. That if you're here for the public hearing, we prefer you wait. Good evening. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor Yates and members of the council. My name is Jerry Ryu. I'm the director of the San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund. The Housing Trust Fund is a nonprofit corporation whose mission is to increase the supply of affordable housing throughout San Luis Obispo County. We provide short-term financing and technical assistance to assist affordable housing projects. I'm here today to thank you for your ongoing support of our organization, financial support and participation on our commission, to give you each a copy of our annual report, and to invite you to our anniversary celebration, which is coming up February 24th at 8 a.m. in the morning. I'll be sending you all individual invitations. Thanks to your support and the support of every other city and the county within the San Luis Obispo, the Housing Trust Fund has been a tremendous success. In 2010, 30% of all the housing starts in the whole county were in projects that we helped assist. So far, we are up to $8 million in financing for 224 units of affordable housing. At the present time, we have $3.5 million available to help finance affordable housing projects. The kind of financing we provide includes helping a group buy the land, pay for pre-development cost or construction, so, and then normally we're paid off when they get the permanent loan. So I want to thank you again for your support and hope that we can continue working together in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for coming down. David, good evening.
Good evening, David Nelson, resident of Morro Bay. These mics are really not very loud when you're in the middle. You can't hear anything that's going on.
AGP, could you please turn up the podium mic? Thank you.
Your mic, too, Mr. Mayor. Couldn't
All
hear
mics.
You. Thank
okay.
you. Well, I'm here as a citizen with a couple of complaints. Our new Taco Bell is awful. I don't know why it had to be that big. I mean, McDonald's and Burger King is much lower profile. We lost a tree in front of it. It looks awful. The drive-through is right on Main Street. I don't know what we're thinking. You know, I live in North Morro Bay, and I really don't like what's going on. We got a lot that was broken into 23 parcels for a development that probably will never happen. But just the thought of having 23 houses in that neighborhood is wrong. Now, I've talked at these meetings against these projects, not Taco Bell, but we expect the Planning Commission and the Council to be watching out for our town. Whatever happened to our fishing town persona that we were supposed to have? Now, if you look at that corner from Taco Bell out, it looks like any other corner in any other little town. Freeway. We're not any other little town. We're Morro Bay. We're special. I don't know why you don't think that, but all of your actions point to that you don't. I mean, the zoning that's going on is not helping our neighborhoods, not a bit. I mean, I can point out lots of errors that's gone on in the last few years. Nobody seems to be changing it. The other thing is, rumors have it that we spent $5 million on our sewer and we're still chasing a sewer in a floodplain. I don't understand what everybody's thinking. Can somebody explain it to me why we would build our sewer in a floodplain? It just doesn't make any sense. There's alternatives and, you know, I really don't like the way the money is being spent to chase alternatives. Our council and the Cayucos people should be able to put something good together before we go to all this expense. I mean, we're blowing money like a bunch of drunk sailors. It's crazy. Let's see. Oh, yeah, the power plant. I was looking for the closed session report that you guys had last week, but I guess we didn't get one. And, my opinion on that is that I was at the State Water Board just last week, and, you know, the writing's on the wall for this power plant. And my fear is after reading their compliance paper that they put into the State Water Board is that they want to put jet engines on that site to blow out as much carbon pollution as those four units put out for just 387 megawatts of power. I hope that you make it clear that when that goes, it's no longer ocean dependent and to move it. I mean, that's the best thing for our town. I mean, just look at what the difference is, just those stupid tanks being moved finally. I mean, just think if that power plant wasn't there or if it was a museum or something, then we'd be even better. I mean, let's wake up. Our town's way too nice to be wasting it the way we are. Cutting trees down and not replanting trees isn't helping our town either. So, really, let's get it together.
Thanks. Thank you, David. Thanks. Please. Okay, let me kind of go over how we operate. How we like to operate here is that we don't do that because what that invites is booze, and then what that invites is just a total degradation of the decorum of the meeting. So I would respectfully ask you not to applaud or boo to our speakers. Thank you very much. Good evening.
Good evening. Susan Stewart, resident of Morro Bay and owner of a business on Morro Bay Boulevard. And I wanted to acknowledge three women, Nancy Johnson, Carla Borchard, and Joan Solu, who put together the Luminaria Walk. And I know it wasn't
as spectacular as maybe we all hoped and wanted, but boy, it was a great effort, and I know you guys put a lot of work into it. There were a lot of people in the community who helped put it together, and a lot of merchants and others who contributed to funding it, and I think it was a great effort. I saw lots of people walking down the streets with their lighted candles, and it was a nice holiday feel. Next year, we'll have brighter lights, hopefully not made in China, get something a little bright and pretty. The other thing I wanted to acknowledge is that night we had two blocks of Morro Bay Boulevard where the tree lights weren't on, but we made a call to Mr. Yates, and he made a call, and the lights came on. So the little lesson there is, if you have a concern or a problem, make a phone call, ask a question. Maybe it gets solved, but again, I want to thank you guys for what you did, because people have to try those new things, and I really appreciated it. Thanks.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for coming down tonight. Good evening.
Evening. Welcome. How's it going? My name's Scott Doyle. I'm the vice president of Cal Poly Surf Rider Club.
Could you, pull the mic right up your mouth? Thanks so much.
Yeah, I'm the vice president of the Cal Poly Surf Rider Club, and I'm here just to bring to you guys' attention a little project that we've been working on over the past fall quarter that we're trying to get implemented now. Over the past 2 years, we do several beach cleanups at the local beaches, and we've just seen a large issue with cigarette pollution. So we created four cigarette collectors. Like, you put them at the beaches, and people, instead of throwing their cigarette butt onto the beach or in the sand or in the ocean, whatever they do, they instead throw it into the collector, and it has a bag on the inside that just collects the cigarette butts over time. And I'm just trying to figure out, I've been talking to an associate with EcoSlow, trying to figure out how to get these bait tanks. We call them the cigarette butt biters. That's like our term for them. I brought a picture here to show you if you're curious. I'm just trying to figure out a way to get these installed. We have four total, and we're looking to install two in Morro Bay and two in Cayucas. And the lady that I've been talking with, named Maria, that works for EcoSlow, she told me to come to this tonight and to just give you guys my pitch and see where we go from there. So I don't know if you're supposed to, tell me what to do. I know I only have 3 minutes. Maybe I could leave an email, or, I'm just trying to figure out how to get these butt biters installed. I was thinking one maybe at the pit or at the rock. The pit's the parking lot in between. I'm sure you guys know. Okay, sorry. Yeah. The pit or the rock. We're still trying to figure out how to properly, mount them and make sure that no one can vandalize them or, kids can put their hands in them. They're going to be pretty high up. The only issue is, can't really show you here, but, is there? Excellent. That's what they look like. And so, it's kind of nice. You can put them in the gills or in the mouth. It's kind of a metaphor, you're polluting the life of the ocean with the cigarettes. So, yeah, we would plan on maintaining them. We're not sure how quickly they'll get filled up, but we're just do whatever we can to get these installed and don't want to make it a hassle on you or anyone at the city. So we would plan on maintaining them maybe once every Sunday or maybe once every 2 weeks. They hold quite a bit of cigarettes. We don't have an exact number just because we're not, trying to sell these. Oh, yeah, sorry. All right.
Mr. Noah Smuckler has offered to be the liaison between you and staff.
Okay.
I think everybody would be supportive of this. I know.
Excellent.
As a smoker, I'm always looking for a place to
yeah, exactly. To put them, so. That's all we need.
I think you will find support. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Who would like to go next? Good evening, Ken.
Good evening, Council. privileged member of Morro Bay, Ken Westerfeldt. Just wanted to reiterate a little bit on the caroling cop cars. It's amazing how well it is taken. It's also a product of the neighborhood watch, and it takes an awful lot of people to put this thing together. Not only people, but money, which brings me to say that in this community, it is amazing with our economic times how well people are giving, not only for the caroling cop cars, but a lot of the churches are helping with groceries and stuff for people who cannot do that. The Thanksgiving dinner couldn't be done without an awful lot of money that's been giving, so it's kind of proud to be around here and do that. Being out in the community, the caroling cop cars is well received throughout the community, and if you didn't have the privilege of riding on the trolley to see the young kids receive gifts and to yell out for Santa, it's quite enjoyable. Also wanted to wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas. And I say that with well-meaning. I know it's kind of tough times for people to not wish you a Merry Christmas because it might not be correct, and they have to say Happy Holidays. 65 years old, I still believe in Santa Claus. But I wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Also would like to wish my friend Franco a Happy Hanukkah, and to, again, wish everybody the best of times. And may your New Year's resolution be that everybody here enjoy their property rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Thanks for coming down tonight. Who would like to go next? Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Welcome.
Gary Johnson, resident of Morro Bay. I just want to say, Bridget, thank you. You've been, since 97, any time I've gone in the office, you had just been 110%. And Mayor, City Council, and I just want to ditto what the police department's done, the chief over here, Mr. Santa Claus. You have to go on the trolley to really, really enjoy it, because every street we went down, these kids, I didn't realize there were so many, hundreds and hundreds of young kids come out and get that little doll, and the parents are happy. What a great community we live in. We live in a positive community. This city council is doing one heck of a job. They're 100%. They believe in people. They believe in business. Business is growing in this town because of your efforts, and also because of the backup that we have for our city employees, who are very positive. I know you, all of you, and it's just super. You do anything I ask. It's amazing. So anyway, thanks again. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and that's it. And I'll see you later.
Thank you, Gary. Who'd like to go next? Anybody? Here comes Betty. Hi, Betty.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz. I would like to make a comment about A2. This item is regarding an MOU of understanding between the firefighters and the city. And may I say, I do not at all begrudge new terms for the firefighters, and I think that that's important. The information, however, I think is technically accurate, the conclusion could have been worded differently. And by that, what I want to point out is that the city is getting the benefit of the individual firefighters paying for their own PERS or benefit at 9%. However, what doesn't seem to be real obvious is that they're also getting, in December at the same time that they're going to start paying the 9%, that they will be getting an increase in salary of 5%, and then 6 months later, another 1% increase. So what seems like a real benefit to the city, I just want to point out, is only a 3% benefit. I would like to ask some questions about A4. This is about our water and sewer bills, and they list how much income we've taken in by percent and numbers and how much has been spent. And I'm curious, because our water and sewer bills are paid at the same time, and yet at one, the water, we have only 15% noticed, and on the sewer it's 22%. So I'm curious why those numbers don't add up. And then, more importantly, showing that the water fund is in the red, is that because that includes capital projects, or is that just operating expenses? On A5, I'm curious as to why the council has agreed to a 2-year extension for GAFCO when our normal ordinance says that there will be a 1-year extension when you haven't fulfilled your first 2 years. On A7, this is an item that is a second reading on asking the police chief to approve certain licenses without public hearing, as we've traditionally had on those kinds of businesses. And I'm wondering, is he going to be required to notice people, because it says that people will know about it, and I didn't see where it showed how people will know about that. The last one is kind of a curiosity, and that is that tonight you're declaring Arbor Day as of December 4th, and traditionally Arbor Day is in April and usually the 29th, and I'm just curious what's up with changing of that date for our city. And lastly, the lease site on the Embarcadero A13 is going to have an annual income to the city of $7,000. That seemed a bit low to me when many of us pay over $12,000 a year in rent, and we don't have that lease front ocean view. So if you could explain to us about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Who would like to go next? Good evening, Roger. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay resident, and I'd like to make note that there's more to Morro Bay than the politics that sometimes divide us, and that is our generous nature, which I applaud, and I'm very pleased to experience. This time of the year, unfortunately, there are many people in need, and the need seems to increase in intensity over the holidays. But Morro Bay, as Mr. Vesterfeld pointed out, has a very generous nature, and so I would like to remind us all that the little red buckets with the people ringing the bells representing the Salvation Army is a wonderful opportunity to donate and to help those in need. Loose change whenever you go mail a letter or you pick up some food at Albertsons. A loose dollar bill. It all adds up. And as I understand, all the money collected in those little red buckets stays right here in Morro Bay, helping those of us in need. So again, I applaud Morro Bay for its generosity. Thank you for the opportunity to mention this. And fellow citizens, when you have a chance, please give. Thank you. Have a good
Thanks,
meeting.
Roger. Thank you. Who'd like to go next? Anybody else? Going once? Going twice? Back to council. Thank you, Caroline and Father Mills, for coming and introducing yourself and the Jesse King Memorial Plaque Race, Jesse King Memorial Paddle Race Committee for their generosity and presenting the city with the check. And Jerry, David, Susan, I missed a surf rider's name. I apologize for that. Ken, Gary, Betty, and Roger, we appreciate you coming out tonight. We are at the consent calendar. I'm going to pull A5 on behalf of George. Any others to pull? Looking, Carla, Nancy, George? Anything to pull? Noah?
Yeah, I would like to pull A4.
Can I hear a motion, please, approving items A1, A2, and A6 through A13?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 5-0, A4, Noah.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to pull this item. It's the quarterly financial report, to thank Ms. Slayton for putting this together for our benefit and the public's. And I would, because of the amount of funds that are in play there, like to give Mr. Wade a chance to respond to the questions during the public comment regarding the water fund and different levels of those expenditures.
Thank you.
I'll take a crack at it, and I'll let Susan chime in if she feels the need. In our water fund, we're feeling the effects of inflation, I think is the fair way to put it. So over time, our costs have increased. Our revenues haven't increased in the water fund. Our rate has been, in fact, I believe, since 1995. So we're getting a little long in the tooth on our water rate. I would anticipate over the course of this year, 2012, bringing some issues forth to PWEB, then to the council, a discussion about our water rates, but I would anticipate the need to raise those here in the future. It has largely to do with, it's really inflation, cost of state water, other fixed costs have increased. We are fairly aggressively pursuing capital projects, but a lot of those are grant funded right now. So I wouldn't really put it on grant funding. I think it's more just we've held on to it as long as we can, but we're going to have to do something here in the near future. So I hope that answers your question.
I do have one other comment to make about it, and that is that the water fund in July pays the majority of the state water contract. So 67% of the annual amount due on the state water contract was paid in July. So that's going to skew your percentages. And that information is on page 2 of the staff report. It's just directly below the enterprise fund. I had a little asterisk by the water department and expenses to let you know that the 67% of the annual amount of the state water contract has been paid. The other thing that I can add to what Dylan said is that the revenues, just because we have sewer and water billed at the same time, the revenues don't match. It's not as if you're getting a 50-50 split. So if you pay $10 for water, you're paying $10 for sewer. They don't quite go that way. So the water department does have a little bit more revenue than the sewer department, basically for that reason. And then plus the sewer department, they get different things. So you can't exactly look at just the utility billing as your driver. There's other components to it.
Thank you. Yeah, would you like to wait for the whole package of consent items, or should I move A4?
A4.
Okay, I'll move. Approve A4.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. I'm going to ask George to step down, please.
Yeah. Yes, I have to remove myself because of the ownership in GAFCO, so I'll be right back.
I don't think it'll be long, George.
Motion.
Let's just be legal. Yes, I'll
move approval of A5.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 4-0. George? You want to take a break or you want to try and chomp out D1?
D1,
Ms. Luker.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. Item D1 is concerning a request to utilize $600,000 of the Affordable Housing in Lieu funds for a project located at 555 Main. Just briefly, the balance in that fund is approximately $650,000. There was $200,000 allocated to a project, a workforce housing project located on Teresa Drive, and $400,000 allocated to the 555 Main Street project. Several months ago, we were notified by the Teresa applicant that they would no longer be needing that funding, the $200,000, which upped the available amount to approximately $600,000. Recently, staff was contacted by the applicant from 555 Main Street, and they asked about the possibility of allocating the disencumbered $200,000 to their project. We have been informed that the applicant for 555 Main is interested in purchasing the property and is hoping to close escrow by December 31st, and that is why this appeared on your agenda so quickly. Should the council authorize the use of $600,000 for this project, staff will move forward and try to negotiate terms and conditions for this loan. There's also attached to your staff report a letter from the applicant for the project. I'm happy to answer any further questions you might have.
Questions for Andrea, Carla, Nancy, George, Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I just had a couple quick questions, Ms. Luker. The first would be, if we do this, would you be willing to, in this discussion about the terms, with this additional $200,000, if we could have an earlier sunset perhaps with that loan as part of that discussion? Obviously, this is a really valuable project. We don't want to put it at risk, but it would be interesting to see if that is something that would be possible to bring these funds back into play for future projects down the road. The other was, we had talked about the quantity of affordable housing units or the level of those affordable units as an interest for us. And I doubt anything's changed since our last hearing with the party, but if you could bring those onto the table in this next round of discussions with the additional $200,000, that would be appreciated.
Certainly the terms and conditions, it's something that we can address. I'm not quite sure I understand your question about number of units.
I think it's specific to the level of affordability for those units. If possible, could we find room to increase the affordability of the unit from I believe we're at a low and we're at a low level, if we could actually introduce a very low level if possible or something along those lines, that would be nice. Again, this is a really important project with a lot of benefits for us, so I think it would not be in the council's interest or the community's interest in holding a hard line there, but at least to introduce that.
Certainly, and I by looking over at Ms. Wald, I got the head nod, so yes, that is certainly possible.
Are you okay approving this?
Yeah, I'll move approval if you...
Let's just make sure everybody can call it.
Yeah, I just had an opportunity to, speak with Ms. Wald today and the city attorney both, and I'm not as concerned about the sunset as it's been explained to me that that's somewhat of a normal course of a timeline on a housing project, on an affordable housing project, but my concern was more about having some... sort of agreement that has performance triggers in it to make sure that they keep the project moving along and that we protect the funding that we're putting forward towards it. So those were all answered and are going to be addressed and included by the city attorney, so I feel very comfortable with this.
Great. Nancy, anything? Go ahead.
Okay, I move that we adopt staff's recommendation on this with the requests that different council members have stated tonight.
I think we need to be a little more specific than that, Noah.
Okay, we'll withdraw that motion and move that we authorize utilization of $600,000 of the Affordable Housing in Lieu Fund for the project located at 555 Main Street.
Thank you. Perfect. You have a second?
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay, we'll take a break and then we'll come back for B1. If I could ask everybody to take a seat, please. It's on my mind. If you people in the back would like a chair, there's chairs along the wall here. There's a stack there. If you're okay standing. Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order then. And we are at item B1, Mr. Livick.
Yes, this is we're going to be hearing an appeal tonight and on the Cerrito Peak project. Initial use permit UPO 233 and coastal development permit CPO 285 for construction of a new two-story split level residence and attached two-car garage. Ms. Wald will be doing the staff presentation on this.
If you could speak right into the mic, Kathleen, we'd be grateful.
Great. Good evening. As Mr. Livick said, the subject of tonight's presentation is the appeal of the Planning Commission's decision for use permit and coastal development permit for 1 Jordan Terrace. And your staff report tonight is rather thick, and we have included a wealth of information for you to consider, including the 4 appeals that were filed and the staff report that went to the Planning Commission. And as background, we provide for you that this item was heard before the October 5th, 2011 Planning Commission. And after staff presented their report, including the environmental assessment, that Planning Commission took public testimony, and at this time there were 6 individuals speaking in opposition of the project and 5 individuals speaking in favor of the project. In the tonight's City Council staff report, we provide a synopsis of, or just a brief overview of the what the individuals spoke about on the project. And after that, we also provide for you that the Planning Commission took action to approve the project with some modifications. And those modifications, as were presented or adopted for the conditions of the project, are presented in your staff report. We go on to include a discussion of each one of the 4 appeals that were received on this project, and that is summarized in your staff report. And I can briefly go over those. And we had one from the Sinsheimer, excuse me if I don't pronounce this right, Junk, Liebens, and McIver on behalf of Nancy Mellon. And their issues are summarized as no additional information submitted other than the 2 letters previously. Oh, I guess I should say this, that I summarized it by saying that there was no new evidence presented by this particular appellant other than those, the information previously submitted regarding the Planning Commission or into the Planning Commission packet based on the environmental document that was circulated. So the analysis of that particular appeal would be contained in the Planning Commission packet. Then on October 17th, 2011, we received one from Nicole Dorfman. And her letter included statements such as the visuals do not include the driveway and the trees for which are to be removed for the driveway, incomplete markings to indicate location of the driveway, no definitive placement of the house and driveway, and no delineation of the amount of public right-of-way proposed for public use, or excuse me, private use. In addition, there is no indication how the driveway and the house will impact drainage. We also received another one on that same date from Dr. John Thompson, and his appellant issues were summarized as that the project's potentially significant impacts have not been sufficiently identified, studied, delineated as required by city standards, as well as the California Environmental Quality Act. One, he wants to know how the proposed structures will affect the public views and aesthetics of Cerritos Peak. 2, reject the biological assessment conducted by David Wolf, dated October 16, 2008, identified as Exhibit D as being invalid. 3, that there has not been sufficient examination and disclosure of how drainage and rockfall during and after construction will impact the surrounding neighborhood. And finally, 4, that the city should require a Phase 2 cultural resources evaluation prior to approving the project. And finally, the last appeal filed was from Edward Finnegan and Julian Smiley. And to summarize their issues, that they state that the project is fraught with potential future conflicts, potential risk from rock removal, conflict with values espoused within the city's local coastal plan, and then they go on from there. So staff just indicates in this report that we reviewed the information contained in the appellant documents and found that no new material was contained within these documents, which would alter the staff's recommendation for this project to be approved as conditioned. And with that, we just conclude with the statement that insufficient information has been provided by appellants to demonstrate that the Planning Commission's findings or their approval were in error. Therefore, staff finds that the appeal is without merit and recommends the City Council uphold the Planning Commission's decision. I would like to state that we received numerous letters after this packet was prepared and distributed to the council, and we gave them copies of those to you tonight, and that would include a letter from the Coastal Commission, and as there were 2 letters that came in late this afternoon, I'm talking after 4:30, maybe as late as 5, staff would just like to indicate that we haven't had sufficient time to review those letters and the information contained therein. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Kathleen. Questions for Kathleen? Noah?
Yes, thank you. Couple of questions. One has to do with the driveway itself. I know there's been discussions from visiting the site and talking to the applicant as well as listening to the Planning Commission's presentation. And I'd like you to describe a little bit about the requirements for the size of the driveway, in particular the fire requirements, how that transpired, and if there is some leeway for us to be able to shrink that driveway, as currently required? Do we have that ability? Because that appears to be one of the key issues for the number of trees that are going to be cut.
Okay, so the driveway, as proposed, meets a fire apparatus access way and includes a turnaround installation in that driveway, and that's required due to the distance that the home is away from the public right-of-way. So anytime it's over 150 feet away, they require, as they get an engine up there, a turnaround. So I believe it was probably a year ago that fire worked with the applicant. We were all out on the site, and it was staked and trying to determine where to locate the driveway in such a manner as it reduced the amount of disturbance to the site and avoided any kind of resource or anything that needed to be avoided out on the site. So that's how it came to be the way it is now. Basically the driveway is where the preponderance of the cut and fill occurs on the site. So the only real, option or available alternative to reduce the driveway would be if the house were to come down the hill closer to the public right-of-way, and then you may eliminate the need for the turnaround. But, given the fact that this site is unusual and that there are some actual issues that need to be avoided on the site, I don't know how that would work. I mean, at this point, that's not been designed. What I do recall is that there was a considerable amount of effort from all city staff and the applicant to work out there to try to get that access way in there with the least amount of disturbance to the site.
And our requirements, are they equal to the state's requirements, or are they beyond the state requirements as far as that access?
Equal to.
So we're in line with the state requirements. There's no leeway to reduce those any further.
Well, there is opportunities depending. There are exceptions and findings that can be made by the fire chief. The basic standard condition is being met.
Okay. My other question has to do with an environmental impact report, and I understand there was not one required because of the scope of what would be involved with that as far as traffic analysis and so on, but was there some consideration to a reduced EIR that would focus in on the real key elements that this project brings up, such as the visual, biological, and cultural resources?
Okay, so the way that CEQA works is you don't make a conclusion and make the facts meet the conclusion that you come to. So when you conduct an initial study, then you derive where you end up based on the conclusions of the initial study. And so in order to trigger an EIR, you would have to have one of the impacts to one of the sections of the initial study actually trigger a significant impact to an environmental resource. In this case, based on the information that staff had at the time and that we were able to make the determination that while there were impacts from this project, they were being mitigated. There's, mitigations included in that mitigated NAGDAC as a result of the initial study. So they never triggered that it go to the next level of an EIR. So I guess to then go to the next step for what you're asking would be that if you felt that there were some mitigations or impacts that were unmitigated, then that would be an issue still. The Planning Commission made the finding that we were meeting all the tests of CEQA, and they did adopt the mitigated NAGDAC.
Okay. Those are my questions for now. Thanks.
Yes, I guess so. I also walked that yesterday or the day before, and looking at where the driveway goes, and my understanding is there are 34 trees that will be removed. Some are kind of grouped together. But then how many trees will they be replaced?
I believe the mitigation is 2-1. So, you know, there's over 300 trees on that site, and they're removing approximately 10%. They will be replaced 2-1. So there'll be 60-some-odd trees replaced for those 30 that are taken out.
Thank you.
No questions at this time.
Okay, I've spoken to the appellants, except for Ms. Dorfman. I did not. Can you identify yourself, Nicole? There you are. Hi. Oh, we did meet. But when I talked to you, I said it would be 10 minutes for the response, and it's going to be 15. So we're going to have 5 minutes per appellant and 15 minutes for Mr. Riddell's representative, and then we will open it to the public. I have the four appellant names on these pieces of paper. I'm going to pick them at random, so that will be the order we'll go in. And you, when I call your name, you may have 5 minutes at the mic, and then we'll go through the rest. Mr. Schultz?
Could we get counsel to declare their ex parte communications on the matter also?
Sure. I'll declare that I visited the site six weeks ago with Mr. Riddell and Ms. Novak, and there was a couple of other people there. So I have been to the site, and I have spoken to them, and Kathy Novak and I speak quite often, and we have spoken quite often on this project in the last couple of weeks. Next party.
I spoke with the applicant's agent, Ms. Novak, visited the site, Mr. Riddell, and the builder.
Nancy?
Yesterday I walked to the site along with Ms. Borchard, Ms. Novak, and the builder, and I have subsequently spoken with Mr. Riddell about the project.
George?
I, too, have been upon the site with the builder and the applicant and spent quite a bit of time up there. And okay.
I visited the site today with the builder and the applicant, and the applicant's representative. Spoke with them multiple times on the phone, and then also visited the site with one of the appellants.
Great. That good, Rob?
And I did also speak with one of the appellants on the phone.
Cool. So we're at the appellant spot, and we'll ask Julian Smalley to come up first, please. Good evening and welcome.
Hello.
State your name for the record.
My name is Julian Smalley. I live at 356 Main Street, and I'm one of the four appellants who paid $200 to formally object to this development. I'm sure everyone will agree that Cerrito Peak is a beautiful spot with terrific views, abundant wildlife, and a rich Native American history. Like generations of residents before me, I have been enjoying it for many years. Most cities would consider themselves extremely fortunate to have such a resource and would work to preserve it for the public good, but not, apparently, Morro Bay's Planning Commission. Although Cerrito Peak has just as much wildlife, views, and history as Black Hill or Morro Rock, the city has singled it out for development, and we are now facing the threat of losing a treasured public resource. The planning process avoided preparing an environmental impact report typically required for such a sensitive area by the California Environmental Quality Act. Such a report would have highlighted the unique fragility of the site to the developer's detriment. It is, after all, an improbable and impractical site for a residence. The Planning Commission also seems confident that the approved permits are not appealable to the Coastal Commission. There's good reason to believe otherwise. The California Coastal Act states that a development can be appealed if it is not in conformity with the city's local coastal plan. The local coastal plan is, as you know, a list of the city's values and policies that inform and guide coastal development, all under the auspices of the Coastal Commission. Policy after policy in the city's plan emphasizes all of the following in preference to private development: preservation of views, preservation of wildlife, preservation of archaeological resources, preservation of public access and recreation, and finally, responsible development that minimizes risk to neighboring properties. As an example, Policy 12.01 states, the scenic and visual qualities of coastal areas shall be considered and protected as a resource of public importance. Permitted development shall be sited and designed to protect views to and along the ocean and scenic and coastal areas, to minimize the alteration of natural landforms, and to be visually compatible with the character of the surrounding areas, and where feasible, to restore and enhance visual quality. In other words, this planned development appears to be in direct conflict with the very values the city espouses. The development will certainly hinder access to views of the coast for the public, and the hillside itself will lose its natural character. Wildlife on the hill is sure to be disturbed and displaced as trees and rocks are permanently removed. Archaeological resources will lose their natural context, and access to them will be hindered. Public access that has been enjoyed since the city was founded will be restricted, and I anticipate that the public will be discouraged from using what access remains for fear of trespass. There is little public support for this project. Of the five proponents cited by the Planning Commission, three are real estate agents who work at Bayshore Real Estate Agency, whose owner broker is Dan Riddell, the applicant. While they are free to voice their support, they were not asked to disclose their affiliations, so I mention it here for the public record. Another individual was cited as favoring the project despite expressing reservations. The proposition before the council seems clear. Approval will put one developer's personal gain before the public good for all time. It will signal the council's willingness to spend taxpayers' money on any subsequent appeals and legal proceedings, effectively socializing the cost for the developer of what is an unpopular proposal. Denial, on the other hand, says that the council honors the values it espouses in the city's local coastal program and wants to preserve full access to a pristine location that is valued by residents and visitors alike. Preservation of Cerrito Peak will, in the long run, be far better for Morro Bay businesses than the marginal benefits of another private residence. I appeal to each council member, as an elected steward of the city's natural and economic resources, to do the right thing and the wise thing by denying the permits. Thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna go over the policies again. It is America. You can do what you want, but for 20 years we've been operating without responding. As I said earlier, applause. I can tell you what will happen is a proponent will come up and then they will get booed, and then we have a total degradation of the meeting. I see Ms. Cutter handed out eagles on a stick. You want to silently rage? Do that? Great. But I'm going to respectfully ask that you do not applaud or boo or guffaw or anything to any speaker. We've got a whole bunch of people speaking, and so I respectfully request that of you. So, next, Nicole Dorfman. Hi, and welcome.
Hello, my name is Nicole Dorfman. I live here in Morro Bay, and I want to thank the City Council and the Mayor for hearing this appeal and for keeping an open mind to the information that's going to be presented. I respectfully request that the City Council disregard the mitigated negative declaration and require that an EIR be performed on this development, because there is substantial evidence that contradicts.
Could I ask you this? Yes.
Sure.
Thank you.
That contradicts findings from the initial study and checklist, and I will go over two of these contradictions. The first fatal flaw in the initial study has to do with aesthetics and the environment. And the visibility from a scenic highway. On page 8 of the initial study, it's reported that the project would have no impact on scenic resources, including but not limited to trees and rock outcroppings in view of a scenic highway. Within the discussion section about this, it states simply the site is not visible from a designated scenic highway. This information is incorrect. The site is clearly visible from Highway 1, which is a designated scenic highway. I request that the public record be amended to reflect this truth and that an EIR be conducted as per CEQA requirements. The second fatal flaw in this study, I believe, is really a vital one, and it has to do with geology and soils and with exposure of others to adverse effects. This is Section 6, Geology and Soils. Question A asks, would the project expose people or structures to potential substantial adverse effects? Again, no impact is checked here. However, in the following impact discussion section, there are two full paragraphs describing what still needs to be done, including a detailed rockfall investigation and mitigation planning, including, and I quote, risk reduction measures on adjacent properties and need for long-term maintenance, end quote. Number two, a detailed erosion and sediment control plan for protection of adjacent properties. So basically, the report says that there are no impacts and then goes on at length to describe what still needs to be done to investigate what potential significant impacts there will be and what mitigation measures might have to be put forth. I think an EIR would go a long way in lessening neighborhood concerns about landslide and erosion. In typical cases that involve these things, it's well settled in land law that upslope owners owe a duty of care to downslope owners, and because of the unique situation of this lot, whereas there is public land in between the upslope and the downslope owners, the city is putting itself smack in the middle of any litigation that might happen due to this development. I want to say here that I fully support private property owners' rights to develop their property as they see fit within the rules and regulations of the land. However, I strongly object to public domain being appropriated to serve as for the infrastructure of the home. And when I say infrastructure, I'm talking about four very major pieces of this development. Number one is the driveway. It will be 400 feet long. That's as long as a football field. We do not know how much of that is in the public domain. That has not been disclosed. Number two, 6-foot-high public security fence, which will go along at least the eastern periphery of the property. This will be on public lands, as it's stated in the public report. We don't know the amount of linear feet. Again, this has not been disclosed. There will also be private drainage facilities and private retaining walls, all built on public lands. We do not know how many. We do not know the size, and we do not know the exact location of these private drainage facilities and retaining walls. This is all, again, on public land and potentially in view of a scenic highway. There's also unanswered questions about maintenance of these facilities, which are on public land but are privately owned. There are also, of course, liability issues, and I think these questions need to be asked and adequately answered before this project goes forward. I want to say in closing that my son Avery, he's 6 years old, he really cares about this project, so I'm going to give him a few seconds of my time to speak. But in closing, I just want to say that I strongly recommend that the City Council not allow this project to go forward without an EIR conducted, and also that there is some curtailing of the use of public lands to support this very private development. Thank you. And here's Avery. Can you reach this? Here, I'll bring it down for you, okay?
My name is Avery Dorfman. I like to go up to Eagle Rock and catch lizards there. So if they blow up the rocks and all the other stuff, then everything won't have a home to live in. And if a boulder rolls into my dad's garden, he will be really mad about that. He doesn't like it getting ruined.
Thank you, Avery, and thank you, Nicole.
Thank you.
Nancy Mellon, represented by Kevin Elder.
Thank you. Aye, Mr. Elder. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. Thank you for your time tonight. My name is Kevin Elder. As you mentioned, I'm with an attorney with Sinsheimer, Yenke, Labins, and McIver, representing Nancy Mellon. As you mentioned, she's a resident of Morro Bay. For the reasons we've submitted in writing, both to the Planning Commission and here today in your report, we also respectfully request that the MND and the project be denied and not adopted. I think one of the things that's important is to characterize the area around the proposed project. It really, you have Jordan Terrace and Alta Streets that are paper streets. Jordan Terrace is probably never going to be developed, and there's some other probably unbuildable lots around that. So basically all this space around the project site is open space that's probably can't get built on. So I think it's kind of like a park. When you keep that in mind, I think it's important to note that, as has been mentioned, the improvements that are going to go on that open space. There's going to be drainage basins and also the private security fencing that's going to go on this land. I think that if this project were next to an actual what we'd call a park and these improvements were proposed to be put into a park, we would say no, that wouldn't be allowed. So I think that's one of the very important factors to think about where these improvements are going to be located. And also it's important to remember, and probably the most important thing to remember, is that this is this open space around there surrounds a significant Native American cultural resource, and that's something that we need to also keep in mind throughout this. We've mentioned that a lot of the exceptions to the building standards to go along with that, and some of it's the deferments of frontage improvements, and that's, of course, to try and lessen the impact on the environment. But sometimes if you can't do what you need to do, then maybe the project just shouldn't get built. One of the things that isn't in the plans, or at least that we can't find, is that these drainage basins, how deep they'll be. It's my understanding if they're a foot and a half or more, they have to have fencing, and of course that's not shown, so you can't see whether that's in the aesthetics and how that'll affect the development of the project. Let's see. So, and that's part of the which has been brought up already, is that the plans and some of the elevations are just not detailed enough to really see what the aesthetics of the project are going to be, what the overall effect is going to be, and what people are going to see once a project is completed. I think there's also maybe some doubt about where the underground utilities are going to go, how they're going to get there, just because of this unique lot and getting through the rocks, through the vegetation that's there. I think that's something that probably would need to get clarified with, hopefully through an EIR would be the way to go. So in closing, too, I think that at least an EIR should be proposed for here, and that's why we're urging you to also decide not to to approve the MND or to adopt the project this time. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Elder. And finally, Mr. John Thompson. Hi, Mr. Thompson. Welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Yates and members of the City Council, thank you. My name is John Thompson, and I resided at 340 Main Street in Morro Bay since 1963. Although Cerrito Peak is zoned as a residential property, neither the proposed project nor the project site is standard. The Planning Commission's vote should be overturned for the following reasons. One, the site maps in Exhibit C of the staff report dated September 26, 2011, do not clearly show where the building will be located in relation to all significant site features and how much grading there will be. For this project, given it is on a peak with potential aesthetic and environmental consequences, it is noteworthy that there is not full disclosure. It is incumbent upon the applicant to provide more detailed site plans and architectural mock-ups showing exactly how far the footprint of his development would extend across the terrain and vertically. I fear that the resulting project will be unexpected and unfortunate. For example, what is the building pad elevation so that the top of roof elevation can be determined vis-a-vis the top of peak elevation? There are no stakes around the area of the proposed house and no story poles. Could I see the first picture? That's the only indication that I found this morning of where the house might be. It's just a stake, and there's my coffee mug next to it. Nevertheless, it is clear that the project would have a, quote, substantial adverse effect on a scenic vista, end of quote. The tree removal and building site would even be visible from Highway 1. Two, the public still does not know what the permanent significant impact of this large project would be on our local wildlife and the wider environment. Nowhere in the city documentation is it mentioned that Cerrito Peak / Eagle Rock appears in the California Natural Diversity Database, which links it as site number 124. This database contains data on monarch butterfly numbers dating back to 1987, and there's also the Xerxes Society database, which also dates back to 1987. Today, a survey of overwintering monarchs was carried out by Jessica Griffiths, who is here with us tonight, Monarch Alert Coordinator and Master Student in the Cal Poly Biology Department. For 9 years, she has surveyed monarch populations all over the Central Coast. Today, she found approximately 600 butterflies in two trees slated for removal for the proposed driveway. She documented the locations by GPS. Three, the documents provided by the city revealed that the proposed development would, in fact, quote, be located on a geologic unit or a soil that is unstable or that would become unstable as a result of the project and potentially result in on- or off-site landslide, end of quote. Nowhere in the entire packet of documentation provided by the city does a qualified engineering geologist reveal how the public will be protected. The initial study and checklist, pages 18 and 19, states that the site work would, quote, create a real potential, end quote, for detrimental rock fall, then goes on to discuss the possibility of installing rock fall risk reduction screening, quote, on adjacent properties and need for long-term maintenance, end quote. This mitigation has the potential to permanently damage and devalue these properties and would open the city up to potential lawsuits over property rights. Could I see the second picture? That's a boulder that's above my house, and that is a yardstick 3 feet high, and so the boulders are probably 4 feet. And the white that you can see is my roof, and that's on a cliff. The cliff is probably about 20 feet high. As defined, number four. There is now ample evidence in the record that there are potential significant impacts related to cultural resources. As defined in CEQA section 15064.5b1, we can see that, quote, substantial adverse change in the significance of a historical resource means physical demolition, destruction, relocation, or alteration of the resource or its immediate surroundings such that, that the significance of a historical resource would be materially impaired, end of quote. Substantial evidence, as defined by CEQA 15064F5, exists now that contradict the city's assertion in the initial report that there would be, quote, no impact, page 16, checklist 5A. An insufficiently informed approval does not comply with CEQA. The draft mitigated negative declaration is not adequate due to potentially significant impacts for aesthetic resources, biological resources, geologic and hydrologic hazards, and cultural resources that have been identified.
Since the project was heard at the Planning Commission, I will forego any of the details on the project history, the site information, and exceptions, and focus my presentation on five main points that have been raised in the four appeals. And those topics are number one is legal issues, two, aesthetics, three is geology and hydrology, four is biological resources, and five is the cultural resources. First, the appellants raised several legal concerns, including the appropriateness of the mitigated negative declaration, or the MND, versus an environmental impact report, among other items. I will defer to the letter submitted by William Walter, dated December 11, 2011, discuss these items for the record and forego any other further comments. Second, in regards to the aesthetics, the appellants describe this as a moving target and that the applicant has failed to provide details on the location of the house and the driveway. However, the project plans as presented provide detailed information with topographic information, elevations, contour points, finished floor, and height information that defines the location of the house, the driveway, fencing, retaining walls, and other pertinent information. The city has consistently required that this project provide sufficient details in order to evaluate projects for potential impacts and zoning compliance. This project is no different than others and in some instances provided more information than would normally be required. Third, for the geology and the hydrology, the applicants allege that this project has not adequately addressed drainage and that will impact neighbors and further potential rockfall discussion is incomplete. The questions that the appellants raise are certainly good. However, these are questions that should be asked and will be answered at the final design stage. By that, I mean you're not here tonight to approve the final designs, but rather we are at a stage in the permitting process whereby you are determining whether or not sufficient information has been provided, evaluated, and any potential environmental impacts have been addressed with mitigation measures in the MND and initial study. Ultimately, the final designs will be prepared, reviewed, and approved by licensed professionals. There may be some minor design changes during that review period. However, these will not be significant enough to warrant modifications to the MND. At the end of the day, this project will be required to meet all the regulations. For example, the drainage will not be allowed to run off or affect the neighboring properties. Lastly, on this subject, submission of a rockfall investigation report and other engineered plans does not mean that the studies are being deferred to a later date, but rather this is the appropriate under CEQA through project conditions to provide detailed final designs and specific procedures to address the impacts discussed in the MND and to be consistent with the determination that the project will not have a significant impact on the environment. Fourth, concerning biology, the appellants allege that the biological resource evaluations are invalid, misleading to the public, and lack information regarding sensitive or special status species, in particular the monarch butterfly, the migratory birds, and the rare plants. In addition to the appellants' decide, a late email correspondence from the Department of Fish and Game commenting that the MND discussion of potential project impacts that the Fish and Game stated, quote, there are no rare plants were detected on the project site without the actual rare plant surveys being conducted. Furthermore, the department states that appropriate avoidance measures for tree removal during migratory bird nesting season were not included in the document. The department continued with recommendations that include tree removal outside the nesting season of February to September, or if this cannot be avoided, then a qualified biologist would need to survey the project site, provide findings and protection measures if necessary. In order to address the above-mentioned concerns, I would first like to start by saying that a qualified biologist was retained and conducted several site visits. The first comprehensive biological assessment was prepared by Mr. David Wolf, dated June 30, 2005, in which his conclusion was that no special status plant species were observed or expected to occur on-site in the habitat types. In addition, while he observed a variety of resident and migratory birds, there were no special status or other special wildlife spotted or expected to be on the site based on the vegetation and the habitat. A second review letter was done dated October 16, 2008, and was submitted to the city, reaffirming Mr. Wolf's first report, and now a third letter dated December 8, 2011, was submitted to the city and included by reference for the record. The most recent letter again affirms the findings of the two previous letters and provides directed comment toward the rare plants, nesting birds, and monarch butterflies. Specifically, the potential rare plants listed in the original report would have been noticeable and identifiable during the time period of the original field survey. However, no rare plants were observed, and the site does not provide suitable habitat for these plants. As far as the migratory birds, this site... Is that 15 or is that was 10? Great. As far as the migratory birds, this site has the potential to support nesting birds. The MND has addressed this issue and it includes a mitigation measure, which is environmental condition number 7 in the conditions of approval. However, furthermore, the city has adopted a major vegetation policy and migrate towards their winter roost sites. During the first visit in December, Mr. Wolf observed approximately 50 individuals in sight with no roosting aggravation. The next day, he observed a small aggregation of less than 200 individuals in one of the trees to the southeast below Cerrito Peak and in the same area as the October visit. He notes this would be considered a small winter roost aggregation as compared to 21,000 currently down at the Pismo Beach winter roost site. He concludes his report by stating that while the site is used by the monarch butterfly, it does not support substantial autumnal or winter roosting sites. It is also common to observe monarch butterflies in and around stands of eucalyptus trees, and this area is no exception. In his professional opinion, given the results of the autumn and winter roost surveys conducted on the project site and required tree replacement mitigation, potential impacts on the monarch butterfly would not be considered less than significant level. My fifth and last section is in regards to cultural resources. The appellants raised concerns regarding the reliance of future studies and determined potential and additional impacts that future studies may not be used as the basis for determining the MND has sufficiently mitigated the impacts associated with this project. I would like to start this portion of my presentation with a brief discussion on archaeological reports and specific code requirements so that I can provide the Council with a better understanding of the concerns raised. There are three basic phases of concern to the developer, landowner, and the city. Phase one is an inventory of cultural resources and generally consists of records research, a pedestrian field survey, and a written report. Phase two is an evaluation of a cultural resource, and the purpose of this phase is to determine whether the cultural resource is significant as outlined in CEQA. Usually this will include test excavation pits, and the goal is to determine the site boundaries, an assessment of the site's integrity, and the evaluation of the site importance or significance through a study of its features and artifacts. And phase three would be data recovery. These reports and evaluations are used by the city to assess the environmental impacts of a project. CEQA requires the lead agency, in this case the city, to first determine whether the site is a historical resource or an archaeological resource and whether or not the project will have an impact on either of these two resources. CEQA sets forth criteria to determine the potential significance of a cultural resource. Cultural resources displaying one or more characteristics may be considered significant and therefore subject to mitigation measures or evaluation for prior potential impacts. Code initially dictates that lead agencies shall identify potentially feasible mitigation measures and significant adverse changes in historical or archaeological resource. The lead agency would also ensure that any adopted measures to mitigate or avoid significant adverse changes are fully enforceable through permit conditions, agreements, or other measures. The discovery of cultural resources during construction should be avoided where possible. However, when exploratory trenching is not practical or feasible, grading or construction monitoring may be recommended as a mitigation measure under state law. In addition, CEQA, if the resource is deemed important, then the impact should be mitigated in one of four ways, which are avoidance, site capping, conservation easements, or data recovery. If impacts cannot be avoided, sufficient time shall be allotted to excavate a sample and site, and a provision should also be made for construction work to continue at other parts of the site while such archaeological excavations should take place. With this project, the archaeologist concluded in his Phase 1 report that, based on his investigation, the preliminary evidence suggests that this is a significant resource. A follow-up letter by the applicant was provided to the city in December of 2010, which acknowledged the site contains a unique archaeological resource as identified by Mr. Bertrando's cultural resource inventory dated June 5, 2001, and a letter dated January 11, 2009, and for the city to proceed with identifying the appropriate measures to mitigate the impacts. Since the option the site was significant was done prior to the circulation of the MND and initial study, the project impact discussion was treated as such, and the mitigation measures were established based on the assumed significance. Therefore, the mitigation measures contained in the MND are not relying on future studies that would provide any additional information to determine the site's significant cultural resource. Furthermore, appropriate mitigation measures allowed under state law include construction monitoring, data recovery, and avoidance. Specifically, this project will have the following. One, ground-disturbing activities monitored by a qualified archaeologist and a Native American monitor. There will be data recovery and evaluation, avoidance of the bedrock martyrs, and lastly, continued access to the site for local and Native American tribal groups with recorded covenants notifying all future property owners of this property of this agreement. The last project condition was proposed by the applicant to allow the local Native American tribal groups access to Cerrito Peak and the recorded archaeological sites. This extends to 22 representatives listed by the Native American Heritage Commission for this area. There was no disrespect in intending to ask for a 48-hour notification prior to access, but just a courtesy between parties. In conclusion to this section, I will reiterate that the MND and
George, over here. Okay, there's I think there's about 90 people in the audience. If you all wanted to speak and took 3 minutes, we'd be here till like 1:30 in the morning. So I'm going to ask that I'm going to try to hold this to 90 minutes total for public input. I know some of you have presentations and you need your full 3 minutes. That's fine. If you can come up and in 30 to 60 seconds say what you need to say. I would like to get to everybody if we can. I'm going to try. So please state your name for the record and your city of residence, and 3 minutes. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Dr. Gloria Velasquez from San Luis Obispo. As a Navajo Chicana resident on the Central Coast, I'd like to read a statement from the Coalition to Save Usaki, written by their spokesperson, Monique Sonoqui. This is a statewide indigenous group dedicated to preserving indigenous sacred sites. A copy of this statement was sent to the City Council yesterday. We are writing this letter in support of the Coalition Save Cerrito Peak Eagle Rock in Morro Bay and their concerns for the Jordan Terrace Cerrito Park Project Riddell UPO 233. Tribal religions view the landscape as an integral part of cultural and religious experience because it is not only the locus for human experience, but the earth itself is a living entity and manifests its relationship to all forms of life by sustaining them. In use of geographic locations, therefore, the non-Native American religious bodies, churches, etc., can accommodate almost any assignment and make use of it. Native American religious bodies, mountains, bodies of water, ceremonial sites, must use particular locations or they cannot continue their ceremonial life. You can build or move a church, but you can't build or move a sacred site. They're put here for us by the Creator or God. When they are destroyed, they cannot be replaced or rebuilt. It is a sacrilegious act of cultural genocide. Because of the United States government's treaties, laws, and desecrations, Native American sacred sites have been provided many protections that we are advising you to consider in your decision to allow this development that can lead you to lengthy and costly litigation in the future over this and other illegal developments. Legislation and executive orders regarding Native American cultural resources are the following. American Indian Religious Freedom Act, Antiquities Act, Archaeological Resources Protection Act, Historic Sites Act, National Historic Preservation Act, National Environmental Policy Act, Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, Executive Order 11593, Protection and Enhancement of the Cultural Environment, DOD Directive 4710.1, Archaeological and Historic Resources Management, White House Memorandum for the Heads of Executive Departments and Agencies, Executive Order 13007, Indian Sacred Sites, May 24, 1996. DOD Directive 4715.3, Environmental Conservation Program. Therefore, we urge you to overturn the Planning Commission's conditional approval of Riddell UPO 233 and not allow the development to take place under any circumstances. Sincerely, Monique Sonoqui, spokesperson. Thank you.
Thank you. David?
Good evening, David Nelson. Go back to my comments earlier. You guys told us who you talked to. You had four appellants out here that had really good points. How many of you met with them? These are our citizens out here, all these people that paid money to appeal this, which to me is crazy. But these are our citizens, but none of you guys bothered to talk to them. At least you didn't say you did, and I understand it. One of the council people may have even denied a visit from an appellant. So this is what's wrong with this whole system. Just for the record, I'm against this project for all the reasons that you're going to hear tonight, including the Native American proposals that were just here. This is just wrong. This is our city. It's not up. I know that you allowed our plan to be invaded by realtors and business people who believe that everything has a price. Well, sure, Ms. Novak could stand here and tell you all the reasons, because she was part of implementing the plans. So, of course, she knows what's going on. And you can bend any rule to fit any situation. But, you know, aesthetically, this is our city, and we want to keep it beautiful. Now, if you choose to just keep listening to developers, these citizens will come out against you in the next election. And I know that none of you really care. So, thanks.
Who'd like to go next? Hi.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Krista Kendall. I'm a Morro Bay resident. I live on Bernardo, and I have been in the area for about 5 years. I've owned a business here. My great aunt and uncle moved to the area about 50 years ago from Los Angeles, when this was just a small resort town and people bought little vacation cabins. The reason he moved here was to escape the growing city of Los Angeles. And while I visited here in my childhood, it was always my dream to also escape and live here in paradise. You know, my Uncle Joe was always explaining how Morro Bay really, really cared about the environment and nature and the estuary and the ecosystem. And I just always wanted to live in a place that was actually protected. A year and a half ago, my husband and I had an opportunity to move to a different state. We went to that different state. We investigated. We looked at houses. We looked at property. We could have lived on 10 acres and a giant house for the amount of money that our two-bedroom house costs here in Morro Bay. And we made the choice to live here because it's a beautiful, pristine area that during the decades that my family has been here, it has maintained that. It has stayed very much the same. One thing that people might not know is that Cerrito Peak was actually, there was an art show, one of the the Art Center did an art show up on the peak, and they actually hung paintings up on all the trees up there. And if you go through the old newspapers of the town, you will see that that peak has been used through the ages for this town. Ms. Novak, you did state about the butterflies stopping over. That is not a true fact. The butterflies fly all the way from northern Canada to those specific trees, those two specific trees that are marked for removal. I spoke with Dr. Lincoln Brower in Virginia, one of the foremost migratory butterfly experts this week. He had stated that he had been to beautiful Morro Bay and loved it, and also was sure to tell me how important the Morro Bay colony was. And I was sad to tell him there was very, very few left. What else did I want to say? Another thing about the butterflies, I bet nobody knew. In 1957, when people still didn't really believe that a little tiny butterfly could fly 2,000 miles without knowing where it was going, the Museum of the Royal Ontario Museum of Zoology and Paleontology of Toronto, Canada, conducted a study across the United States, and Morro Bay was actually a vital part of that study. Citizens across the city came together and had a butterfly count and picnic. People came from as far away as Pennsylvania for this event. I am just dumbfounded why we are not using ecotourism to draw people here. I just want to say one more thing. This is super important. I went to the museum to get information on the butterflies. They told me to go to Pismo. I went to the state park to get information on the butterflies. Ma'am. They told me to go to Pismo.
Ma'am,
I'm just saying I'm going to go spend my money in Pismo.
Please. Thank you. I'll respectfully request, we have the buzzer. We have a three-minute rule. We have used up, you know, each speaker 3 minutes. We will not get to everybody if everybody, you know, has the need to use up the 3 minutes. Good evening, Ms. Cutter.
My name is Dorothy Cutter, and I've lived here for 53 years. I think you should rescind the permit for the following reasons. There was not an EIR, and this is a sensitive area that can be seen from Highway 1, the Embarcadero, Harbor Walk, Main Street, and Baywood Park to name a few. It is also a major monarch butterfly habitat and an Indian sacred site. The developer does not have to post a bond to protect damage that they might cause to property owners on the hill, nor do they have to post a completion bond. It might be several years before any construction, and in this uncertain economy, it could be started and not completed. There should be money to restore this property if this happens. Both of these should be mandatory for a project such as this. There may be a question of prior rights by the public. Would you build a house on Morro Rock or Black Mountain? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cutter. Who'd like to go next? Come on up. Hi.
Howdy. Mr. Mayor, council members, thank you. My name's Chris Molina. I'm from Atascadero, California. I am a Salinan tribal member and spokesman for the Salinan tribe today. I'd like to read just a quick statement as to our stance. As a state-recognized tribe, we, the Salinan tribe, recognize the site before this council as sacred to us. It is part of our heritage and our history. Also, as a government-to-government entity, we recognize that the Morro Bay City Council has the right to approve the building permit for Mr. Dan Rizal. Thank you.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next? Hi.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council. My name is Jessica Griffiths, and I work for Monarch Alert, which is a project out of Cal Poly. I went with John this morning to survey the butterflies. I have several years of experience in surveying sites, such as the one at Eagle Rock. And as previously mentioned, in a letter from David Wolf dated June 30th, 2005, which I believe is in Attachment 1 of the agenda, he states that, quote, none of the CNDDB monarch butterfly occurrences were recorded on Cerrito Peak, and that the trees on Cerrito Peak, quote, do not present ideal habitat conditions for monarchs that seek protection from the wind and elements for winter roost sites. I believe neither of these statements to be true. I also believe that the City Council was operating on incomplete information when they first approved this project, because this site is listed in the CNDDB. As John mentioned, it is site 124. However, it is listed as Eagle Peak, not as Cerrito Peak. So it is possible that when David was searching the database, he did not find that information because of that. So just quickly, I would like to read a letter addressed to the City Council of Morro Bay, which is included in your packets, but was delivered at a very late time, so the public might not have gotten a chance to see it. To the City Council of Morro Bay, this letter is from a biologist at the Xerces Society. It has recently come to our attention that the proposed Cerrito Hill development will destroy important monarch butterfly habitat. When David Wolf prepared the biological report for this project, he apparently made a mistake. I believe that he searched the CNDDB under the wrong site name for the property and mistakenly concluded that monarch butterflies do not use this site. However, monarch scientists have documented that monarchs have been using the site since at least 1987, with the population reaching as high as 7,000 in 1 year. This year, hundreds of monarchs are observed using trees slated for removal. For decades, the Xerces Society and its members have worked to protect monarchs and the habitats upon which they depend. Since 1997, overwintering populations of the monarch butterfly in California have declined by approximately 90%. I have a visual. I have a graph that shows the decline. So this graph shows the decline in the Western monarch population. It has declined 90% over the last 20 years. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature considers monarch butterflies to be an endangered phenomenon. In order to survive, the butterflies require habitat for both overwintering and breeding, and loss of habitat due to development is considered one of the threats that have led to the endangerment of this butterfly. Dr. Joanna Engel, an ecologist with the California Coastal Commission, suggested that the habitat slated for development would meet the criteria of an environmentally sensitive habitat area, or ESHA, because it harbors monarch butterflies. I'm not going to continue reading the letter because I'm going to run out of time, but it is there. It's all there in your packet. And lastly, I would like to address the most recent letter from David Wolf. I believe that several of his statements are actually incorrect, and that is my professional opinion, especially since he refers to merely anecdotal evidence of monarch butterfly use. That is not true. It has been heavily documented by many renowned biologists, peer-reviewed scientific publications, that site is used by monarch butterflies. Also, Oh, okay. All right, I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Including. I appreciate it. Who'd like to go next?
Michael Lucas, property owner, taxpayer in Morro Bay. I just wanted to say I'm happy to see so many of the Native American people here tonight to speak to their interests in the property. I think it's very ironic that when I see the list of people contacted about the project and the list of consultants and scientists, that doesn't seem like anybody asked the experts themselves about the nature of this project, nature of this property. I didn't see anybody speaking to the nature of how to mitigate this by talking to the Chumash or the Salinans themselves. I think it's fascinating that the accommodation for this is to give a gate on public property to the Native Americans for access to their site. I mainly wanted to talk about aesthetics. As an architect with 30 years of practice, mostly on the East Coast where I worked in sensitive historic areas, we'd go to people...
there you go. Hi. Evening.
Good evening. Fred Collins, Tribal Administrator, Northern Chumash Tribal Council, Mayor, City Councilmen and Women, staff. I'm here tonight to represent the Chumash Nation. Chumash Nation has been here many, many, many years, tens of thousands of years. We're the oldest residents of this area. We have a unique relationship with Mother Earth. And in preserving Mother Earth, this is our job. This is what we do here in San Luis County. We preserve our sacred sites. We try to work with development. We try to work with local governments in a good way to achieve a goal of preservation. The Chumash people and indigenous people of this area have lived a colorful life here. We've had wonderful times. This was a great place for our communities to live, to give birth, to pass away. Cerrito Peak is a postage stamp of something that was left by the ancient people, my ancestors. And it's a place where there's a story that can be learned. Learned from the community, learned from, you know, the land itself. It holds a lot of special treasures. And I think that you're taking a real hasty step here in moving, trying to move this forward. You know, the peak's been there for a while, and this project's been on the back burner and on the front burner off and on for many, many years. But I think it's really evident, and you folks are very intelligent people, and I think from what you're hearing, it's very evident that there's more information here that needs to be put on the table so that we can all make a better decision. Getting into the future together, working together, inclusively together, is so important for us to make Morro Bay a better place, keep Morro Bay the place that we love. You know, I've been coming here my whole life. I grew up in Sea Canyon. You know, Morro Bay is an unbelievably special place for me. But I've had some difficult times in dealing with local administration and the preservation of cultural resources here. And we would like to see, and we would like to embrace the city of Morro Bay in a way that you can take the cultural resources of the Chumash Nation, which are fantastic in all aspects, and help them, you know, incorporate them and fold them into your community in a way that, you know, helps your tourism, helps your business, and brings you new, bright ideas about how to preserve and how to protect something that is very, very special. I think we have something, the Native American community has something that we can offer that it's very important for these communities such as Morro Bay to move forward and to be the special place that you've heard so many people already talk about. And there's so many more that can't be here that know about this place as being very special. The Native American, the Chumash Nation, urges you to sit back and gather more information. Let's get an EIR done on this thing.
Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Let's make sure that we make the right decision for the community.
Thank you, Mr. Collins, for coming tonight. Hi.
Hi. I'm Bill Quigley. I live right in that area on the side of the hill.
I'm speaking because of my home, I think it says, problems. If you go ahead, there's a potential drainage problem. That rock was under my house. It's under my foundation less than 10 feet. And it'll be flowing down there, and it'll erode the soil. I don't care what happens up there, as long as my house is protected. And I'm deeply concerned that somebody hasn't properly evaluated the drainage, because that rock is under my foundation probably less than 6 to 8 feet at the most. And the water running down there under this is going to erode that soil. I'm an engineer. I know what goes on. And that's it. Erode it. Give me a guarantee that it won't, and I'll buy whatever you want to do. But until you do, I'm going to be against this project. I could say more, but I won't. Thanks.
Thanks, Mr. Quigley. Thanks for coming down tonight. Hi.
Hello. I'm Berta Parrish. I live on Shasta, right across the street from this proposed project. But tonight, I'm here to read a letter from someone who loves Sarita Peak, Eagle Rock, and it kind of represents the voice of the voiceless, except for the little boy who talked, and that's the children of Morro Bay. She couldn't be here tonight, so I'll just read parts of her letter. I was born and raised in Morro Bay in the neighborhood below Eagle Rock, Bloor, and spend time in the neighborhood. A lot of cities in California are now establishing pocket parks as a place for kids to play when cities are building out on every square inch of land. Eagle Rock is a perfect place for kids to play, obviously for those of us in the past, as well, hopefully, for kids in the future. So I'm going to submit this letter for the record as a voice of the children of Morro Bay in the past, the children of Morro Bay in the present, and maybe the children of Morro Bay in the future.
Thank you. Hi.
Mayor, City Council. I'm Don Boatman. I live in Morro Bay. I live on Acacia Street, which is the south side of Cerrito Peak. And I'm going to read a letter from a good friend of mine, Don Borst, who lives off Olive Street on the north slope of Cerritos Peak. Our views are about the same. The only thing she doesn't say in her letter that I would add is, I think you owe all these people at least some story poles, and you need to outline the driveway with some paint so that people can really see what we're talking about here, what you're talking about. Anyway, I'll read Don Borst's letter. I believe in property rights. A person should be able to build on their property. One needs to be realistic, however, on the amount of their property which is available or buildable to build on. In the case of the property in question, there is not much grounds available which is not already covered in boulders or what is deemed public right-of-way. Therefore, a small structure would be in order, not one which would require the removal of boulders and a considerable amount of encroachment of public right-of-way. We stopped the blasting and removal of boulders on Morro Rock back in the 50s when we realized the value of the rock for historical reasons. We would never allow the building of a structure on top of Morro Rock. The same goes the top of Black Hill. We allow building all around Black Hill, but certainly not on the top. Same could be said of Cerrito Peak. This is yet another outcropping in the chain of Morros from San Luis to Morro Rock and beyond. This would be a travesty, to say the least, to allow anyone to build atop this peak, a structure that needs removal of boulders, the use of public right-of-way in order to move forward. Please approve something much smaller and in keeping with no removal of boulders or use of public right-of-way, both of which are precious to our citizens. The extent of public right-of-way would set a precedent I don't believe you need to deal with, and the removal of the boulders should never be allowed on this outcropping. There have been a handful of projects approved by our city in the 42 years that I've lived here that most could say should never have been approved. Please do not let this project be built as planned without further thought. I'm afraid this could be one of those projects that the city truly wishes they had never approved. I would not want that to be my legacy as a part of city council, mayor, or members, present and past. Please uphold these appeals, regroup, rethink what our future land holdings will look like. And again, adding to this, we need to see some story polls. We need to see what the project really will do on that peak. Thank you.
Thanks, Don. Good to see you. Hi.
Hi. My name is Eric Meyer. I was born and raised on Acacia Street here in Morro Bay. This photo is a photo my dad took around early 50s from the peak. The peak has been continuously trespassed upon for the last 60 years. I believe there's a prescriptive easement on the peak for that reason. The peak was also known as Beatnik Hill. I don't know if anybody here remembers that, but that's just another known name besides Eagle Rock because of the people who lived in the modern houses down the hill. As a kid, we trespassed all over this hill. We have names for every rock on the hill. There's Sleeping Beauty Rock. There's Death Rock. There's Eagle's Nest Rock. There's Butt Rock. Butt Rock is particularly interesting. Butt Rock has a crack in it, which lends to the name. And in that crack are drawings. And I doubt any of you have ever seen those drawings. I doubt Dan Riddell showed you those drawings. And I doubt any of the archaeologists that researched this have seen those drawings. And I'm not going to tell you where Butt Rock is. Those of us who know where it is know where it is. There's also many middens. Most of the middens were wrecked by Mr. Molina, a Portuguese guy in the 50s and 60s, who built all his rock walls out of them up on the hill. The leagues may remember Mr. Molina up on the hill. He was a fisherman. He had a red house, which was torn down in the mid-60s. Anyway, there's also a lot of mortars up there. I went up there looking for them, actually with Dan, maybe a year ago or so. I couldn't find them because of leaf litter, and my memory isn't serving me right. But if I dug around longer, I'd find them. They're up there. I'm not the only person who's concerned, and I think that many people in this room are prepared to act.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next? Hi.
Hi, thank you for listening to me. My name's Sequoia. I'm half Cherokee and Chippewa, and my mother taught me to... love the land.
Where
and
do you live?
Excuse me, Cambria. I did live in Morro Bay, but I'm here on behalf of the Native American belief system. The land is sacred and holy to these people, and we can't give back half of what's been stolen from Native American people through the last 500 years, but this small piece of land we can, you know, cherish and respect these people and try to... And so I'm just here on the behalf of the, I don't know, I didn't prepare anything. I just found out today, and I've been crying all day because it's so upsetting to me that this is happening to this land because there's so few sacred land left, and it's all been desecrated for so many years. And I just feel like we can all stand up and try to save this little piece of land for the Salina Indians. Anyways, thank you.
Thanks. Would you like to go next? Hi.
Hi. Barbara Jo Osborne, 336 Main Street, Morro Bay. My newly remodeled home lies in the potential landslide area. That's important. Last week, a monarch butterfly was confused and ended up inside my home for quite a few hours till I got him out. Destroying this peak is shocking, and I couldn't figure out why anyone would do this. I went, no one's going to do that. So the way my mind works, I thought, this must be all about money. Not mine, but probably somebody's. And I do know, because I heard the owner say this himself, that he doesn't want to build there. He doesn't have an intention of building there. He wants... to get a building permit. This will make his property more valuable to sell. There are quite a few of us that probably want to pull our money together and buy that land. Only we don't. I don't know how to make that happen. So I don't think this is fair. There will ultimately be a cost to all of us, to the city, to just society as we see it. Ultimately, there will be lawsuits. Ultimately, there will be injuries. You can't really blow up rock and hope that it just doesn't fall anywhere. It's really not safe to build there, and it's wrong, and I agree with everybody else. So I support the appeal. The other thing I want to say is I really do believe in my heart of hearts that the city is supposed to be stewards of the land. You guys first, us second. You are supposed to do what's best for all of us. And I want to quote from the fourth book of Harry Potter. It's very important. You should write this down. There will come a day when you will have to choose between what is easy and what is right. Today is that day. Please do what is right. Please.
Thanks. Hi.
Good evening. My name is Marianne. I am a long-term resident of Morro Bay, raised both of my daughters here, and love Morro Bay. And I know some of you up there. I'm here for two reasons. One, first to take one little second and acknowledge the Native people and the sacredness of the Cerrito Rock. And the other reason is to read this letter from Roger Case, who's not able to be here this evening. Okay, let's go. Okay. My name is Roger Case. My wife and I moved to Morro Bay in 1964, prior to its incorporation, and became acquainted with the Fairbanks family. At that time, they owned the Cerrito Peak parcel, APN 06. I'm not so used to talking so quickly here. APN 066221-001, often referred to as the Eagle's Nest. The Fairbanks purposely kept Cerrito Peak undeveloped. As a result of our relationship with the Fairbanks, we have had a continuing interest in Cerrito Peak parcel. In fact, 42 years ago, my wife and I purchased property at 405 Acacia, Morro Bay, located directly beneath Cerrito Peak. Obviously, I agree with this letter. Otherwise, I wouldn't be reading it. Okay, onward. The Fairbanks fell upon hard economic times, and their properties, including Cerrito Peak, were sold at auction. Local residents and friends, Ray and Elaine Fry, purchased Cerrito Peak for a pittance, knowing that it would be problematic to develop. It proved to be and was subsequently sold several times more. Each purchasing party knew Arsh's membership of the City Council, Planning Commission, et al. I am curious as to what kind of epiphany has taken place at this time for the council and its commission to make a 100-degree reversal in policy and grant a conditional use permit for the development of Cerrito Peak. Seeing none from my perspective, I submit that the issues are the same as before. I strongly urge you to deny the conditional use permit and maintain consistent public policy with regard to Cerrito Peak. Failure to do so would subject the city to unnecessary litigation, liability, and criticism, and provide a disservice to the citizenry. Sincerely, Roger T. Case, Jr.
Thank you. Hi.
Do the photos first. Hello, my name's Abe Pearlstein from Los Osos, 11-year resident. I've been visiting this site for over 11 years, and I have noticed the decline of the monarchs. I don't think it's from the people visiting, but I cannot imagine that removing the trees that the monarchs exist on, and if you could show that short 21-second video on there, please. This was taken 1 year ago. There were approximately 400 or 500 individuals. In addition to this one clump, there were two others. There is a large population there, and it really needs that spot to survive. And I'm hoping you will deny this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Dave Shoemaker. I'm a homeowner and resident in Morro Bay for about 12 years. And I echo what everyone has been saying about the environmental, archaeological, and you know all the other concerns. And what really gets me is, how can the city give property away to a private landowner? You know, you're subsidizing this project. And if you folks just want to okay a permit, that's one thing. But you're actively involved in allowing this project to go forward. So what kind of a signal do you want to send to the rest of the state and to the country about the type of leadership we have here in Morro Bay? Are you folks just willing to sell the soul of this town for a developer? Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for coming down tonight. Step right up.
Hello. My name is Karina Cardin, and I am a Native American, a resident from Atascadero, California, and a Cal Poly student. A land is sacred for our people. We honor and respect nature. We respect life. Everything is life for us. And even eucalyptus trees, rocks, butterflies, we do not kill or remove things where they are supposed to be. We honor nature. As a caretaker of Mother Earth and an environmentalist, it hurts me to know that trees may be removed. They are life. They are energy, living beings. And if they are removed or if they were removed, it would be like removing my own limbs. That's all that I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Who would like to go next? Here we go. Hi.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Dr. Kate Martin, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I guess the biggest point that I want to make to you is when we look at places that have considerable cultural and important significance, especially for our Native community members that have already spoken here at the council, we have an opportunity here in Morro Bay to really show that we respect what this land means to them. The UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People has not been on the forefront in the United States. In fact, we have been the last country in the world to even accept the declaration. But here in Morro Bay, we have an opportunity to actually make a point on a land that is already documented as being sacred to Native peoples. Why would we not want to step forward and be part of that? How can we even look at a project that is suggesting a 400-foot driveway is appropriate? I know exactly why they want that 400-foot driveway, because it'll move it up to the very best view and make that property worth the most amount of money it can possibly be. We're looking at something more special about that property than a 400-foot driveway. We're looking at land that cannot be altered to accommodate and say, okay, it's still going to work for you. It doesn't. Once it's altered forever. And that property needs to be kept the way it is. I am very passionate.
You purchased it with your money. First, I believe in saving butterflies. I have a butterfly habitat. I have over 200 to 300 butterflies that come through there every year. I respect wildlife immensely. I come from a Celtic background. I have very, very due respect for the Native Americans sensitive to this area. Everybody that got up here tonight live around that mountain. Every one of them. They live around. That whole mountain should be sacred. I think everybody should move off that mountain and give the whole mountain back to the Salinians. But I also strongly believe in property rights of individuals. If they can meet the permit process, the building codes, and so forth, then they should be able to build on the property. When he purchased the property, did anybody tell him it was sacred? Did anybody come up to him? Did anybody in this neighborhood come up? You can't buy that land because it's sacred. That really ticks me off. It really does. I'm sorry, but I've been listening to these people now for an hour, and I just think they're way off track. Can I have that first picture, please? No, the ones I have right there. And then overall view from the estuary showing the property in question. Thousands of eucalyptus trees are in view and the property at the top of the hill. And none of those trees are going to be cut down. The very top to the right, he's on the other side of that hill, and you're not going to be able to see that. But I can sure see a lot of other homes. Look at those four homes in the foreground. I can see those. They don't talk about that. House to the right of the property. Next slide, please. Okay. This is the one that's one of the appeals. He has a three-car garage, big home, 4,000 or 5,000 square feet. Look at that. I wonder how many eucalyptus trees he cut down. Next slide. Over here to the left, there's runoff. You cannot believe. You're talking about a 400-foot driveway. You go to the left, and it goes down hundreds and hundreds of feet, the water that pours down the side there. So they only report what they want to say. Beginning of the property in question. Next slide, please. Okay, you can see the person walking down. It's a beautiful, beautiful walkway through there. Unfortunately, they're going to have to cut some eucalyptus trees because they're required to go 20 feet instead of 12 feet. Next slide, please. This one really irks me. Property to the right on the north side, there was some trees removal. And when I asked, when I wanted to be sure I was correct, I asked the person who owns this property, did you cut the trees down? Oh, no. Very mysteriously, the trees disappeared because that house over there that's complaining about his property, those trees were cut down. Matter of fact, he saw their gardener cut them down. He called the police, and the police came out, and I don't know what the results were after that. Next slide, please. Okay, there's the view of the people that cut his trees and his personal property. He cut them down so they could have a view. Now, I can see that house over there, but that's different. We don't want to talk about that. There's another view where the trees were cut down by the owner. Now, right there is where the house, part of the house is going to be built. And they don't blast the rocks out. They drill a hole, put plastic material in there, and then they expand the rocks so there's no explosion and so forth. Next. Okay, now there's the habitat. I'm a geologist, I'm an engineer, and I got a pretty good background in this subject. And so those trees to the over there are not going to be cut down. You're not going to be able to see the house. They're live with butterflies. And the trees that are already cut down are down below, and the butterflies don't want those. If these people are so saying there's butterflies in those trees, why don't they bring some pictures like I'm doing and prove the fact that there are butterflies down there at the bottom? Next slide, please. That's the last one. Okay. Now, my recommendations is this. Okay, pass it as is. Okay. The neighborhood can purchase the property. The city can trade the land. And most importantly, I think that, can't get the page open here. The Native Americans, can they buy the property? I think that if that's the case, I think the Native Americans have more of a of an issue than this, than all these people live all over the neighborhood, all around the whole place. They get up here like a bunch of hypocrites and say, oh, you can't build there, but oh, it's okay if I'm there, but don't anybody else build. Can the Land Conservancy purchase the land? I have an idea, too. If the Native Americans can go to the owner's property, why can't they all go around the hill looking at other people's property for artifacts? You see what I'm saying? Let's dig up the whole hill and let's look for artifacts. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Gary. How many more do we have? I've had a request for a break up here. How many, can I see a raise of hands? How many more people want to speak?
Perhaps the butterflies, the Native American interests, drainage. But I want to bring up more things. If you were to go up there today, you would see trash. You would see beer bottles, soda cans, wrappers, evidence of lots of other activities besides Star Trek in a tree. And I think that if this does not pass tonight for a permit, if you deny the request, then as a city, we need to think about what happens to that property. It's private property, yes. If it becomes public property or remains private property, do we still allow people up there? Just throwing it out there. There's a lot going on up there besides just people looking at butterflies. The Highway 1 issue, almost every house in Morro Bay can be seen from Highway 1, obviously. As far as engineering goes, I'm an engineer as well, and no engineer in their right mind is going to give you a guarantee 100% that their project is going to survive whatever comes at it, or that your adjacent property won't have any issues. That's just not possible.
And as an engineer, I feel like I need to tell you that. I would, as a structural, I would never tell you that one of my buildings would not fall down in an earthquake. I try my best to prevent that, and I wouldn't want that to happen ever, but I can't guarantee it. I can be sued, though, but I can't guarantee. Architectural character and conformance. Obviously, some of the properties down below are ostentatious when compared to what this house would look like if it was built. And I did want to bring up that one of the appellants cut down trees to have a view of the bay, and can that view be trusted when, you know, it's hypocritical. So, anyhow.
Thanks, Jessica.
Have a good break.
Thank you.
Is the speaker speaking as a planning commissioner or as a private citizen?
I'm speaking with my own views.
Okay.
So,
thanks,
as
Jessica.
A public citizen, I am a planning commissioner.
Who'd like to go next? Step right up. Andrew? Hi.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council members. I'm Andrew Christie. I am the director of the Santa Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club. In the opening scenes of the movie Edward Scissorhands, the camera swoops in on a small, picture-perfect American town. It tracks to the end of the town's main street, where it suddenly encounters a mountain, and on top of that American mountain is a European castle, and in that castle is a mad scientist and Johnny Depp. And clearly, Mr. Scissorhands' neighborhood did not have a local coastal plan, but you do, and it requires that new projects be compatible with the existing surrounding development and acknowledge site context to maintain an aesthetically pleasing community and not detract from the natural environment. It has been noted previously that the proposed project will sit like a monolith in the middle of public open space, which the initial study omitted to state or otherwise refer to the fact that this project constitutes a large house, secondary unit, access route, parking, fencing, and infrastructure set down in the middle of the open space that is Cerrito Peak. In view of CEQA's clear guidance on deferred mitigation, the substantial amount of evidence now in the record demonstrating that the MND is inadequate and supporting a fair argument that this project may have a significant effect on the environment, and the fact that there is disagreement among experts in the assertions of David Wolf in the biological assessment versus the statements of Brandon Sanderson of the Department of Fish and Game, you would be well advised to decline to adopt the negative declaration and require the preparation of an environmental impact report. Thank you.
Thanks, please. Betty?
My name is Betty Winholtz. Just for clarification, I believe that the appellant that they feel has been cutting trees actually inherited those cut trees when she bought the property. I don't believe it was her that actually cut the trees. My statement is that I'm going to address three issues. The first is having to do with insufficient information. First, it has been suggested that insufficient information has been afforded to you, the City Council, that you don't have enough information to see the error of the Planning Commission's decision. If that's true, how do you account for a 227-page staff report? How do you account for the submissions by an attorney from the Office of Fish and Game, a professional entomologist? How do you account for the submissions by the Chumash and Selenian original peoples are being requested to facilitate a private development in contrast to public improvements, which is normal, allowing fencing within Jordan Terrace, providing, this is a great one, quote, to provide some private outdoor space, a fence to enlarge both on-site and portions of the public right-of-way. So this owner has 1.1 acres and yet is requesting public land to provide enough open space for himself. What Mr. Riddell is not being required to do that others have who have developed their own property is a drainage analysis and runoff calculations, an erosion and sediment control plan, a current soils report, an access improvement plan, a rockfall investigation and mitigation plan, and the grading that is because it's of greater than 25%, causing dangers to the neighboring properties, in addition to the Phase 2 cultural resources evaluation. My last comment Well, let me add this then. The reason given that these features are not special privilege in the staff report is, quote, due to the site topography that a grant of special privilege is being had. I would remind you that the Cloisters also was a site of special topography, and yet that developer had to give quite a bit of mitigation. And in conclusion, I too have had access to that property for the last 25 years and believe that there is prospective rights that need to be honored.
Thank you, Betty. Anyone else? Here we go. How many to follow here? How many more people want to speak? I think we will have to call a break after you. Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, Council, John Fennessy. I'm a resident of Morro Bay and also a business owner as a lawyer. And near and dear to me as a lawyer is upholding the Constitution of the United States as well as the state of California with respect to personal private property rights. I think on both sides of this, both issues, you know, for this development and against this development, we could argue for days and days and bring up so many different issues. But I really think that the fundamental issue is taking a look at the Constitution and what it provides that we uphold as public servants, and that is to prevent a public taking of private property. The Constitution and the Supreme Court allow a process of eminent domain, which is not the case here, to take private property. So I think that's the real serious issue that's before the council, and I want to encourage you to support this development and support private and personal property rights. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take it. I'm sorry to do this in the middle of public testimony, but this is the way it is. So we'll take a 10-minute break. We'll come back, and then we will go back to public hearing. We take our seats, please. We'll resume. Continuing the public hearing portion, who would like to go next? Ken. All right, Ken may follow this gentleman. Good evening.
Can you hear me? Okay. My name is William Dalmovic. I'm the designer and potential builder of this project. I was requested to design this project on this hillside for a very good reason. I live in the Sierras in Sequoia National Monument. I've been building up there for 32 years. I've built a reputation of building aesthetically, environmentally, strategically built homes on mountain hillsides. The Sierras are very steep. They have very fragile vegetation. We're in the Sequoia National Monument area with Sequoia trees and many of the other larger trees. We're in an old-growth forest, and I take it very seriously. All of my construction, whether it's on a flat meadow in the mountains or on the side of a rock outcropping, it takes consideration of everything around our area. I love the Central Coast. My wife and I spend close to 20% of our time here. We own the home in Cambria, and we live in the mountains. It's a four-hour drive. We can be at the ocean in 4 hours, cross-country skiing in another 4 hours back in our mountain community. Mr. Dan Riddell went through a lot of effort to explain to me what problems we're probably going to have here. And so he asked me, Bill, you have to be very, very specific. You have to be able to be exact. That we have done was to keep intact the sensitivity of that mountain. The colors on the home will be mimicking the boulders and the terrain and the trees. And I wouldn't be surprised if even more monarchs are going to come to the area because it's very pleasant. those of you that think we haven't considered all of this, you're dead wrong. We've considered the needs of the Indians for their sacred rock. We're not touching that peak. We're nowhere near the peak. We don't plan on blasting one rock whatsoever. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. My name is Manza Furuhar, and I have lived in Morro Bay for the past 24 years. And my house is right below that peak. So it's one of those houses that is in danger if this development goes ahead and the rocks come down. But that's not why I'm here. The reason I'm here is I'm an educator. I'm a history professor at Cal Poly. And one of the main things I do in classroom is trying to teach my students to appreciate history, to be proud of their cultural heritage. And it's an irony that I have to come here today before you, citizens of Morro Bay, knowing this area, knowing what is at danger, what you might be destroying. And in my classroom, when students don't appreciate history, when they don't appreciate the heritage, I take it for granted there are students, they don't know better. But that I cannot say about you guys. And it's going to be a really shameful day if I have to go to my class and tell my students, look, your elected representatives have sold a piece of history, a piece of your culture, for the interests of a developer. Thank you.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next? Come step right up. Hi.
Hi, Monique Fleck. I live in Morro Bay on Luzon Street. I have lived in this community since I was 3 years old, and I have been raised by the community as a whole. The nature and environment in the community has also shaped the person that I am today. Eagle Rock has been a place that I have explored as a child. It's a place that me and my friends would escape to, get away, soul search, do all those things that people from all over the state come to Morro Bay to do. I don't consider Eagle Rock a place for development. In my mind, it is just as important as the Rock and Black Hill. I don't see it as, I see it as a landmark. And to think of somebody developing on a landmark that important to our environment, that important to our community, is just, it just blows my mind that anybody's even considering this. I do know for a fact that a lot of tourism does come into Morro Bay for our nature. They come here to get away. They come here to experience what we have to offer, and nature is one of those things. And as a citizen of Morro Bay, it really is up to us to protect that. It is up to us to protect what our reputation is, and is not destroying our habitat. It's not destroying our places that feed our souls, that feed our minds, that make us the people that we are. I lived in LA for a couple of months, and I came right back. And I can't explain how hard it was to find somewhere to get away. How many people told me they knew Morro Bay? How many people were proud of me for living here? How many people said, that is such a beautiful place. You are so lucky. I can't tell you how many people said that they were proud of who I was, and I told them it was because I lived here, because I live in a community that raised me. I live in a place where I had nature to get away to. I had a place to think. I was really upset one day, and I was in LA, and I couldn't find anywhere to go to, except for a parking lot. So I found a, I was a little upset, so I found a nice parking lot to sit in where I could get a little bit of privacy. And I don't want my community to turn into something like that. I don't want to be a sellout for money, because to me, our environment is richer than, it doesn't have a worth that you could put a dollar on it. It's rich in itself. If we do preserve
Eagle Rock, it'll be there for hundreds of years. It'll be there for tourists to see. It'll be there for the town to experience. It'll be there for our children to experience. It'll be there for...
in the universe every day. Things change a little bit. And so, you know, there we are in this situation where we don't want change, and so we want to fight against this thing. But I have to tell you that I think the dialogue here tonight has been very, very good. I'm particularly impressed with Native American communities coming out and expressing their sincere beliefs, which is very important. I respectfully disagree with the fact that it's been stated that they believe an EIR is needed on this thing. I don't believe an EIR is needed. Lastly, I would like to say that all of you, when you took your oath of office, you promised to preserve and protect the laws of the United States and the state of California and the Constitution. And there's a tension in those laws between what we can order other people to do and what they have a right to do. And in this case, this has been zoned R1 for, you know, as long as anybody can remember up there. It's zoned to build a house on. Mr. Riddell is the owner of that property. And so here you are to balance the community concerns in the legalistic ways that you can, and you've heard a lot of input about that, but you've also had a lot of staff work on that. You've had a lot of hearings on that. So I'm here to tell you that I'm going to support what decision you make, and you have to make a choice about all these, you know, little things that you've heard and big things that you've heard, but I think the evidence is there, and I think that ultimately, you know, you should support this project and uphold the rule of law as best you can, and I wish you luck in that decision. Thank you for being there.
Thanks, John. Who would like to go next? Hi.
Hi. I'm Dr. Joe Morris. I live in Morro Bay, just down the street on Shasta Avenue, about a five-minute walk from the property we're talking about. I came here 3 years ago, retired from a university teaching job in L.A., and we don't have those hearings in L.A. because there's nothing more to preserve. One of the last ones I heard about was actually rather pathetic, people trying to preserve a car wash in the valley. That's what it's come to. Anyway, just some points to raise that maybe haven't been raised in the past. And I obviously, like others, I respect the rights of an individual property owner, but they need to be well balanced with the interests of the greater community. And my sense of this project is just inconsistent with the scale and character of Morro Bay and its historical development patterns. Just some of the points that haven't been raised about the staff report, and I'll be very succinct about this. The staff report, for instance, mentions the provision of an 8-foot-wide public asphalt path. And hasn't been mentioned, but is this really, would this not change the character of an open space? Quote, an open space? This doesn't sound like an open space to me. Something else I question, would like to know more information about, the fire department condition says that there'll be some vegetation removed due to the defensible space requirement. I wonder what that unspecified vegetation is. We know about the eucalyptus trees, but what else is going to be removed? We'd certainly like to know that, if that has to be done, and we hope it doesn't have to be done. Finally, the CEQA legislation has been mentioned so much today, does state that, and just quoting two sentences, the decision to prepare a mitigated negative declaration must be grounded in an objective, good-faith effort on the part of the lead agency to review the project's potential for significant impacts. This includes cumulative impacts, in other words, several. In other words, it says two or more individual efforts, which when considered together, are considerable or compound or increase other environmental impacts. We could look at these impacts together, not just singly. So finally, what I'm saying is the presence of good faith or the consideration of cumulative impacts for this project right now are just lacking, and a carefully done EIR is clearly called for. Thank you.
Thanks. Who would like to go next? Anybody else? Here we go, Ken.
Good
Good evening, Council. Ken Vestergaard, resident of Morro Bay. First and foremost, I hope that I'm recognized as someone who respects people's opinion and what they have to say. I truly do. Over the number of 16 years that I've been here, involved in running for council, planning commission, I've always thought that I have been respectful of what one person has to say. Tonight we are hearing from a lot of people about the sensitivity, actually the sensitivity of all of Morro Bay as a Native American. And yet they feel it's their right to be able to build on the rock. Yes, we are talking about personal property rights. The same property rights that each of the people who have spoke against their belief, have spoke for their belief, that they should be the only one to be allowed to build and live here. You heard from the Salinians that said, yes, it is a sacred ground, but they also, and I'm not quoting, but also to the point that they believe in property rights. If you go back over to the sand spit or down by rock and look back over to that site, you're going to see a new home on Olive Street that was just built. And you can pick out that home without even binoculars. People think that they built on Main Street. If you go look at Main Street, the houses have to go up like this. They're built on the rock. So please, folks, let's all come together and realize the value of what you're saying. Property rights are very valuable. Why do you want to pick on someone who was quoted to being a developer? The last time Mr. Riddell built a home was 21 years ago. Developer shouldn't even be used here. A person who wants to have their own property rights and build what they want. I appreciate what you have to do. I appreciate the people who have spoken here, and I hope that I have the same respect. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. Anyone else? Anybody? Here comes Roger.
You didn't think I was going to remain silent. Good evening once again.
You stalled really good. You had us in suspense.
My name is Roger Ewing, and I'm a Morro Bay resident. And I don't believe this issue before you tonight is about property rights. None of the appellants, and very few, if any, of those speaking in favor of the appeal have questioned Mr. Riddell's property rights. We all have those same rights to build as we see fit on our property, providing it is within codes and zoning. One of the speakers got up, I believed he said he was a constitutional lawyer, and criticized those of us against this project as the public taking private property. When in reality, what we have is a private property owner taking public property. This 400-foot driveway, these security fences, all are on public land, and there is no benefit to the community for this wholesale gift. You have a dilemma before you tonight. I don't envy you. It's a real conundrum. But I think the reason the perception is held and the reason emotions are high is because there is so little information on this project. Not one photograph of the actual property, not one photograph of the design, and yet you've had people speaking here for 2 hours, and there's no information valid, visual on this project. What's lacking and what is creating the perception of misinformation by some is the lack of a valid, responsible EIR. With a piece of property this important in our community, and it's important enough to fill the house here tonight, then all care should be taken in the deliberation of what you finally decide. And that should include a proper, valid, complete EIR, so that all questions are then answered. Then you can make an educated, intelligent decision, rather than, as things stand now, a decision based on emotions. It's not fair to you, and it's not fair to the city. So I would urge you, please, uphold the appeals, but demand a complete EIR before you make any decision approving the permits for this.
About the wholesale gift of all the public land that's being given away. Much of this talk has been about the driveway and crossing public land. Can you tell me specifically how much public land is given to this builder?
I don't have the actual linear feet in mind, but there's quite a bit of driveway that runs through Alta Street and Jordan Terrace, which the city has a public right-of-way on. So it would be allowing him to access his property via public right-of-way.
Just like most anybody would with their driveway crossing the public right-of-way, except
yes.
A little more, maybe.
Yes.
Okay. Butterflies. We've heard a lot about the butterflies. We have a report from you that they did find some butterflies. Where were the butterflies actually found in relation to the building site and the driveway?
The biologist said in his letter that he saw a couple of trees that were located southeast of the peak, below the peak, southeast, so it would be near the building site, and there are a couple of trees in that location that would be removed. I don't have an actual location map for the biologist to say if it was a specific tree that's being asked to be removed, whether it was they were roosting in that site or not. But they are in the upper area.
The upper area. And are they building in the upper area or down?
They're building in the upper area, but most of the tree removal is down in the lower area right along the Alta Street side.
Okay, one more question about this driveway. I heard talking about crossing this land and whatever. Who's allowed on this driveway? Anyone?
It's open to the general public, yes.
The whole driveway up to how far?
It will be open all the way to Jordan Terrace. In fact, there will be a set of stairs that's built on the side of the driveway because there will be an elevation change between the driveway and Jordan Terrace. So a set of stairs will be built so that people can walk up the driveway, go down the stairs and access Jordan Terrace. And since it is the right-of-way, the public is allowed to walk on Jordan Terrace all the way around the peak.
So he's not actually using that right-of-way?
He's using it for the driveway, but
just
he's not
the driveway.
He's not preventing any action from general public going and using that the right-of-way.
Thank you. I think you've answered my questions.
Let me just hop on that on the driveway thing a little more, if I may. We're not gifting Mr. Riddell any land. I mean, his property boundaries are not going to expand because of this. Is that correct?
That's correct.
This is a public right-of-way that remains the city's property, and he's allowed to drive on it like anybody else, or walk, or in the case that you just explained, walk on it.
Right. The city will retain the right-of-way for both Alta Street and Jordan Terrace, and then what normally would happen if the city would ask a developer to come in and develop the Alta Street and Jordan Terrace to city standards, which would mean it would be a 36-foot wide street, which would be curb gutter sidewalk included. So rather than asking for city standards for a 36-foot wide street, the city is asking for a standard of 20 feet wide for the driveway. It will be a private driveway, but there also a special encroachment permit will be issued to allow Mr. Riddell to construct the driveway on public right-of-way.
Cool. Carla?
So on the driveway question, so access on that driveway ends where his the fence would be then directly on his property going in. Is that correct?
The gate?
Mm-hmm.
The gate's just a little bit below his actual property line because the property is elliptical shaped. It's difficult to try to place the gate in a position so on the on his property line. So he's asking for an exception to allow the gate to come down into the Jordan Terrace right-of-way just a little bit. It's just a little north. It would be just above the hammerhead turnaround that's being proposed. So, again, the public still has the ability to access the driveway and the set of stairs that are going to be built for the public to access Jordan Terrace from the driveway are going to be below the gate, so that will be provide better pedestrian access to Jordan Terrace.
And the expense of the improvements are for the project owner? Mr. Riddell pays all the expenses for this being put in, not the for the city street to be put in?
Right. He's going to be paying. He shoulders the burden for paying all the driveway, the stairs to access Jordan Terrace, and all the development up there. He's paying for all that.
Okay. Thank you. I have a question for this, and I'm done right now for the city attorney. There was a comment made that other councils or planning commissions had previously denied projects up there. Could you answer that? I didn't know that anybody had denied a project before there.
With the help of public service, I know I've been here 15 years, and there's never been any project brought before planning commission or
to public right-of-way. Just to confirm that. That is correct, and that will be covered by a special encroachment permit, and the reason it's special is that's the name we picked for it because we also have a regular encroachment permit, which is construction of streets, curb gutter, and sidewalk. The special encroachment permit, we require the person that takes the special encroachment permit out to indemnify the city for that construction and also realize that upon notice, they will remove those improvements from the city's right-of-way if that right-of-way is ever needed for public purposes. This is not a unique circumstance around town to have these special encroachment permits. Many people have them for retaining walls to hold up their driveways, fences, landscaping improvements, driveways throughout the community are subject to these special encroachment permits. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. To follow up on that, a couple of questions. One is about liability and the idea to protect the homeowners has been discussed tonight regarding a bond and also a bond for protection of liability in case of damage to private property, but then also one to ensure completion of the project to avoid a partially constructed project and blight because of that. So is that something that you've explored before, considered, and how could we achieve that if necessary?
No, it has not been explored. We have a building permit process that we go through. We use the California Building Code to authorize projects. There's a bond requirement for grading, based on the steepness of the site, but not one for completion. We typically don't require a construction of a single-family home to bond for completion of their project. Subdivisions, yes. Single-family homes, no. And I think Mr. Schultz might want to say something, too.
Yeah, I think Rob's said it correctly. We normally don't single-family residents. And if you, for your second one, there's two different issues. The first one had to do with, I believe, just the project, which is specific, but the other one on the blight issue and not being able to finish the project, if we were conditioning this residential home to require a bond for completion, we better be prepared to do it for all single-family residence homes, which obviously would increase the price for any development to occur.
So to follow up and confirm, though, for the concept of protection of neighboring properties during construction, that will be required?
They will be required to, along with their building permit application, complete their geotechnical investigation, which is required through their building permit, which will include their rockfall analysis,
They will, during their building permit process, they will complete the design for their drainage facilities, their the final design of the home and of the driveway. That is when it is appropriate to get that detailed design. Typically, that expense is not incurred until somebody has their entitlements in place, because it is a large expense to engage those engineering studies prior to having any assurances that they can develop on the site.
The idea of that bond being a requirement as that process goes through is possible, and is that currently a requirement, or are we assuming that that will be a part of the process?
That is not currently a requirement. I've never seen a project that bonded for potential damage to neighboring properties due to construction. Because you don't want to have to rely upon a bond. You want them to show you in their building plans how they're going to prevent that from happening. As I think one of the speakers spoke as an engineer, there are no guarantees. There are always unknowns with life. The earthquake could happen now. No, now. This building could collapse. You know, we're all under risk at some point in time.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think given the nature of this site, there it could be argued that there are very unique circumstances for this site versus we would be guaranteed of the long-term viability of these different infrastructures. Most significantly, I think, the drainage component. How is that long-term maintenance reviewed, evaluated, and guaranteed?
The maintenance of the drainage facilities is like any single-family property maintenance. It is the responsibility of that property owner to maintain those drainage facilities. During the design review process, we try to ensure that the facilities are designed for ease of maintenance, so that there, say there is a blockage of an outlet for a storm drain facility. If there is an overflow, it overflows safely to a point of conveyance, like the public street, that it does not impact neighboring properties. The provisions in the Appendix J of the building code prohibit basically increasing the amount of water that would be draining onto neighboring properties. So we don't have a city mechanism in place for long-term maintenance of private drainage facilities on single-family homes. The reliance is upon that property owner to maintain their property like they would their landscaping or their paint on their building, that it's something that they're going to need to do to ensure the long-term, you know, viability of that property as a place that you want to live in.
Okay. Thank you for those, that input. The other thing I'm interested in is, given the comments that we've heard tonight, some of the recent testimony, specifically from the Coastal Commission and a few other organizations, are you still absolutely confident that your determination regarding the necessity for an EIR is still holds, and we can depend on that being able to withstand litigation?
I'll make some introductory comments, and I'm going to let Kathleen follow up on that. Yes, I do believe so. I haven't heard any expert testimony that's been entered into the record that would change our CEQA analysis of this project. And I'm going to let Kathleen follow up on that.
I concur. I've spoken to both the Coastal Commission late this afternoon and also the agency that we received the second letter from regarding the monarchs. And other than documenting that there is some, or as I shouldn't say documenting, but providing some additional information that they believe that there are monarchs up there and there's habitat, neither one of those letters documented a significant impact that is unmitigatable that would trigger an EIR. And I think everybody that spoke tonight is under the impression that staff can just, you know, mandate an EIR. You have to have some documented proof in the record that says that cutting down those 30-some trees is a complete reduction of habitat or is unmitigatable. For instance, you know, we're requiring them to put trees back in. You know, just as we are in everything that was brought up today, there are mitigations in this project for cultural resources. As it was stated previously, you know, there are avoidance. There's access to the sacred site. I talked with the Native American Heritage Commission. They indicated that we are meeting the test of CEQA law on that. You know, there is no, they are not, or as indicated to me, there is no standard by which you would have to completely avoid development on a sacred site. It is about avoiding resources and allowing access to the site. So I haven't heard anything tonight that is, that, or no one has provided documentation that is substantiated, you know, either by expert testimony or anything of that nature that would say that there's some kind of impact that's unmitigatable at this point.
Okay. Along those lines, then, it seems we're confident, then, that this would hold up in court. I know that we have a section in here that indemnifies the city to a certain degree. I've also heard discussions about ways to enhance that protection, hold harmless protection, which is on page 14 in Exhibit B. Three, in that same page, we have changes listed. And at this point, it says minor changes to the project description and or conditions of approval shall be subject to review and approval by the Public Services Director. So basically, it leaves it up to your position, Mr. Leivick, to review what constitutes a minor change, quote unquote, and what would trigger a larger review and amendments into the Planning Commission process. And I would submit that because of the, significance of this project or obvious community awareness of this project, that we'd want to strengthen that and create a simple adjustment, which would be any changes to the approved project shall require the filing of an amendment subject to the Planning Commission review. And the idea behind that would be that there's a chance that the existing applicant will not be the one that will develop this proposal if it's approved, and to leave it open to subjective review from the Public Services Director removes us of our responsibility to cover the community. And as has been stated tonight, this project as proposed is safe through the CEQA review, and our determination is that it doesn't have significant impacts and aren't mitigated. So this change would give us that assurance that we are respecting that evaluation. So I'd like to submit that that's something that we could adjust, and just confirm from you that that's been done in the past on other projects.
Well, I don't know if that's been done on other projects, but I think that in this particular case that the condition may be applicable in the fact that
And we're talking about changes to the exterior or size of the project, not interior. I want to make that very clear. But I think because there's been so much concerns about what was evaluated in the environmental document was this exact project. And as the builder indicated to you tonight, there has been thoughtful process in the way it is sited into the rock, the colors, and the roof line and the design with some thoughtfulness, and that's what was evaluated. So it's not a pink house. It's not a Tuscan house. So I think with that said, that it should be relatively clear that even minor changes in aesthetics on the outside of the project could then, you know, be disruptive to the environmental document. So I think that the condition as you propose is it just solidifies that this is the project that was reviewed and it should be the one that is ultimately built. I think we don't care about what's inside, you know, the layout of it.
Okay, thank you for that. Continuing on then to page 18, we're getting into the trees component. And I disagree that we've mitigated that concern through the replanting just because of the length of time that's involved with a 5-gallon tree growing to be a established, healthy, habitat-providing organism or tree on the landscape. So I think it's weak to assume that is mitigating the loss of habitat that we're going to see with this project. But at the same token, this appears to be what our fallback is to answer that concern. And I would submit that we, in this case, because of the sensitivity of the site, that we actually increase that replanting ratio in respect to the public right-of-way trees that are cut. The private property cuts, I don't recommend that we change, but within the public right-of-way, I think we have the ability and responsibility to increase that ratio. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas about that as far as a ratio that would be recommended or if it's solely up to us to decide that number.
Let me just say that the city council hasn't adopted vegetation removal guidelines, master, and this was taken off of that. I mean, it is the standard operating procedure for the city of Morro Bay that is the replacement ratio. And for any major vegetation removed in the public right-of-way, so it is standard. I mean, that's what we do all over the community. I think that for replacement of trees, you know, I don't know if you're looking for them to all go back on the same site. I mean, you know, it's always difficult when you know that there is going to be driveway, so we're reducing the area that there's available for trees, correct? And now we're asking them to do a higher mitigation. Or if you're interested in this person, the applicant may be providing habitat someplace else, you know, and actually increasing tree planting.
How have we determined that there aren't prescriptive rights on this property?
From my understanding, I'm glad our city attorney just walked in because
I was waiting until he went to the bathroom, but he foiled me.
I don't believe that we as staff or council can grant prescriptive rights. That's something that would happen in a court of law upon somebody suing over those that they had prescriptive rights. They're not automatically there. They have to be adjudicated to determine if there are prescriptive rights.
Good job, Assistant City Attorney. Yeah, we don't have the ability to grant that. It would have to be done in a court of law. There's certain elements that are required to prove a prescriptive easement or prescriptive rights. And so there's many different issues that have to be presented, and that would be presented by the person that was asserting that prescriptive right and would have to sue the property owner for that determination to be made.
So as I would expect, though, that's part of the determination of whether we need an EIR or not, though, is to look at the prescriptive right potential, public access potential, and identify whether there's an issue there or not. It seems like there is.
Well, this is an access. This access is basically trespass at this point now.
Yeah.
Nobody actually has a right to go there. You do understand that the public right of way the elliptical right-of-way around the peak, the public can go in without trespass. Alta Street, you can go in without trespass. It's just the right to access the top of the peak. Anything within that's outside of the right-of-way, that is trespass right now. And there, nobody had the right to go there.
I think most people recognize that. I guess what my understanding is that the act of that trespassing over time creates the potential for access if that has not been posted as, you know, right to trespass is, or right to
there's about four or five different elements that you have to prove for that, but an EIR nor the city can make that determination. You can't take testimony from 100 different people that all said that they've been going up there open and notorious without the permissions owner and meet all those requirements for prescriptive easement. That would not allow the council to say, okay, you've proven it, it's now, you now have prescriptive rights.
So
that that won't factor into any determination whatsoever on the part of the city council.
So it's basically left up to the courts if that, if it goes that far. Okay. Those are my questions for now.
Yes, Noah just brought the thing up, but what I was going to ask about was about the access to the property that has been, is the applicant said he's going to allow people to go up there. Now, is that everybody going to go up there, or is that just
I believe the
Native American?
I believe the condition is that they will allow Native American representatives to access the sacred site upon 48-hour notice of the property owner.
So, so this isn't exactly open to the public, and they just can't figure a way to get up there?
To the private property.
I'm talking about the peak.
The peak itself, no, that will not be open to the general public. We're not going to stipulate in any of our conditions that would allow that trespass to occur.
Hmm. Okay.
But there is the road all the way around that remains public. With your indulgence, I'm going to go next here. I'm going to respond to you first. I'm not supportive of increasing the tree replanting ratio. I think 2-to-1, and we're forcing 18 trees additional than they proposed, and so I think it's fair, and it's what we do with everybody else. Minor changes, having to do a minor change through the Planning Commission, I wouldn't be supportive of that. We have a good community development director, and I trust him, and he knows the sensitivity of this project. He knows what would rise to above minor, so I can't support that. EIR for a single-family home I'm not supportive of, but I am supportive of one thing, though, and that's your first one, to hold the city harmless language. I could go along with that. The blasting, you know, all this stuff, the word blast isn't in here. It's never been proposed. Many of you, or the people who've left, have talked about the blasting. There is no blasting. Drainage, I understand, is a concern. We have drainage coming from that hill now. I went up there, I felt like I was in the middle of a forest. And then I guess for the builder, the concern about rocks falling down, are you insured for that? And Dan, do you have liability insurance? I mean, I don't know. This, I guess, relates to the bond. So I'll ask the builder. Are you insured for that kind of thing?
I carry a liability policy.
You have to step up to the mic. I mean, the last thing anybody wants to see is a rock going down to somebody's house. But what if that would happen, like the building falling in here?
Well, I can't promise. I'm not infallible. But you know, any area, if you've been on the site, you could tell where the potential.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to have to keep the questions focused.
Okay. Yes. I will be carrying a liability policy that's necessary for a general contractor on a project of this size.
Great. And Dan, you would probably be sued as well. Are you carrying insurance for that?
I have insurance for it right now, but I will note that in the 2004 earthquake, no boulder went down that hill.
Thank you. Thank you for squeezing in a little testimony there. And then I guess the final note I have here is that people, our fellow citizens, have compared Cerrito Peak to the Rock and to Black Hill, and I would submit that Cerrito Peak is a private piece of property, and the Rock and Black Hill are public pieces of property, and they're really, in that sense, they're not comparable. So to me, it's a private property rights issue. I think people perceive me and maybe some of my compadres up here as this pro-development. We just want to build and see everybody shaking their head. But, you know, I've been here a long time, too, raised five kids here. The last thing I want to see are high-rises or high-rise on the beach or the character of the town changed. I don't see this as a major character town changer. Somebody complained that they don't know what it looks like. It's go to public services. Everything is there for the public to look at. I guess we can withstand the criticism that it wasn't put up there, but it wasn't. If we don't want this built on, we should buy it. Now, this has come up. Is that what the entire community wants? I mean, that's the question. We're talking $1 million here. We have $3 million in the bank. We could do it. But is that the most responsible use of our money? This is not a Del Mar Park or even a Monta Young or a city park. This is a very closed place that isn't used by a large percentage of our population. You know, my sense is the community as a whole, I'm talking about the 10,800 people who live here, would not support that. But, you know, I'm that's like plucking a number. I'm just making that up. That's just my sense. I do feel I'm a guy who has a finger on the pulse of the community. I think we would come for the same criticism if we, as a city, said, all right, Mr. Rideau, we'll give you $1 million, and we've got you guys coming back at us saying, you're spending public funds for this. It's like we're in a no-win situation. That's the answer. That's the answer. I mean, I'm an open space advocate. We've had some buildings down on the waterfront. I just would have soon see the buildings go away and have a little pocket park there and open to the water. I didn't get my way, and you know, the building was built there, and it was leased land, and this is private property, and so I'm tending to vote to deny these appeals, all four appeals, based on what I just said. Who would like to go next? Let me see if I went after you. Let me just see, give them a chance first.
Addressing the items that Councilmember Smuckler brought up, I would agree with five also with you. I would not agree with changing number three. I agree that our public services director is able to make a determination between what constitutes a need for changing and minor change. In regards to the tree replanting, I believe there's actually over 300 trees currently on the site, and at a 2-to-1 replant ratio, I think that it certainly is going to meet the needs to require them to be planted back on the public space there. I don't know that the neighbors necessarily would want that along the driveway because it would obstruct their view shed, so I wouldn't want to be so specific as to say they would have to be replanted along there, and then you'd be blocking that neighborhood view. So I'm fine with the 2-to-1 replacement. And other than that, at this point,
the neighbors could get together and buy it. Well, if you do that, you also better plan for an assessment district to take care of it and maintain the property. So, I mean, you're talking probably $2 or $3 million rather than just $1 million. So my leanings at this point would be to deny the appeals and support the property owner.
I'll go first.
Well, this is really, like you said, it's really a sensitive
project we're working on here, and it is, you know, property rights we're talking about here. And personally, I'd like to see this property be sold to somebody that would dedicate it to an area. And I just have a feeling in my heart that that's going to happen down the line somewhere. But I have to support the property rights and just hope that something can be done by some purchase. I don't really think the city should be involved in this purchase, but there's other people out there that might step up on this when they realize that, hey, there could be a house built up on there, and maybe we should take some action now.
Thanks. I do have a couple of quick questions. One is mostly based off of the Coastal Commission's letter that we received. In the second paragraph, they talk about confirming the legality of this lot. And from talking to the city attorney, it sounds like we're fairly confident that we followed the historic chain of title and legalities involved with that. I just wanted to hear on the record that you are absolutely positive that we followed the process and looked back into the historic records.
A couple of years ago, the city issued a certificate of compliance on this lot, confirming that it is a legal lot, and that was recorded, I think, in 2005, could have been 2004-ish, for the certificate of compliance.
Okay, following up on that, then, on the second page of the Coastal Commission's letter, the third paragraph down, we're talking about the archaeological resources, and within our LCP, the requirements of significant archaeological resources being protected. And then there's reference to the requirements that all options for avoiding development on sites be evaluated or researched before deciding that this is avoiding those impacts in every way possible. Could you speak to that a little bit? I'm still not clear as to how we have been able to achieve that.
The LCP policy doesn't preclude development on a piece of property that contains these sensitive archaeological resources. It's avoidance of the resources themselves. And I believe they've situated the project itself to avoid the known archaeological resources on the site. Kathleen, do you want to add anything to that?
And then I think that it says including all available measures, including purchases, tax relief, and purchase of development rights. And I think, as the mayor indicated just a minute ago, that that's been bantered about purchasing it, but that as of yet, there's not been any real. That would be the only thing that the city hasn't pulled the trigger on, which would be the actually purchasing the property, but it has been discussed. And my understanding was that I hadn't heard the $3 million before tonight. I'd heard that we had $200,000 in the park and Luffy, and that certainly was not substantial enough for us to actually purchase that property. We were a huge gap apart. So and my understanding was that the city just didn't have funds for it. Mm-hmm. That it was explored, and there wasn't sufficient funds to actually purchase it.
I guess I'm a little confused, though, because part of this, they say in 4.01, is requiring that archaeological resources be preserved to the greatest extent possible. And at the same time, we're providing a fairly significant access for this project to public right-of-way and public resources. So I think it's that extension of those public resources that has actually given this project the ability to encroach as much as it does within the vicinity of these archaeological resources and the other sensitive areas within the project. And so I think by the very nature of us extending this access...
Road any further, thank you.
Well, I guess what I'm suggesting is, for the record, I don't have any problem with the developer, property owner, planning and implementing a project that fits on their property. But when it spills over as much as this does into the public right-of-way and dependence on public resources as it has, then we've crossed a line. So we're no longer discussing just private property rights. We're discussing the public rights as well. So I think we've crossed a line where it's just very simply private property rights or not. We're aiding this project in a considerable way, and I'm not sure I see the direct benefits being returned to the public that you would expect.
May I answer that? Because in listening to the testimony and the staff, we are giving away a certain amount of city property for that driveway. But the driveway is open to the public to walk up. There will be stairs from the driveway down to the path that goes all the way around the point. So we're not giving that away. In fact, the builder is, I think, providing quite an asset for the people who like to use that property. They can now walk up this paved driveway or whatever he's going to put on it, go down those stairs, and then go all the way around the peak, probably far more safely than they can now. So I'm sorry, but I have to completely disagree with what you just said.
Call the question.
I invite you to make a motion. It's hard to call a question without a motion.
Absolutely. I will move that we deny the appeal, uphold the Planning Commission's approval of the condition use permit, UPO 233, and conditional development permit, subject to the findings in Exhibit A and conditions of approval included in Exhibit B, and to include the addition that was submitted by the applicant's agent of the two environmental conditions, number 7 supplemental text, and to add the line as stated earlier by Councilmember Smuckler on Exhibit B, Item 5.
Second. Discussion? Let's do these. Well, I mean, is everybody clear on how we're going to vote? You know why we have these. All right, then. I seconded it. Yeah, I never second, so you just didn't know. Okay, then. Ready? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1.
I didn't.
Thank you. Yes,
I didn't catch that beforehand, and I apologize. We also need approval of the mitigated negative declaration. We can just do that in a separate motion very quickly if someone could make that motion and second it.
Call. So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1.
I have a question.
Next November. Thank you for coming tonight.
Good night.
I'm going to continue item B2, and we will tackle. We'll wait for the crowd to pass.
Yeah, let's stretch.
No recess. We
got to get. Oh, are we not going to do B2 tonight?
Easily.
I had this totally underestimated. You know, when I made this agenda, we didn't have all this. It's going to be a two-hour thing.
You didn't think you were going to have butterflies flying all over?
Oh, my God.
If you could please clear the room, we would be very grateful. We're still in our meeting.
Yes, we are. Get the shoe mash.
B3, Mr. Leibach.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is
this next item.
Excuse me. This
I'm
would
very
be.
Sorry, Rob. Please go on.
This would be an item for the council to review and adopt the draft funding recommendations for the 2012 Community Development Block Grant Funds. As you may recall, back in May of this year, the council agreed to join the urban county of San Luis Obispo, participating with the county and the some of the other cities for the purposes of a city project, which would be a sidewalk improvement project, including gap closures, installation of curb ramps, and repair of sidewalks around town, which would accommodate all low-income and ADA users of the sidewalk, and then allocating approximately $18,681 towards the administrative costs, including preparation of another environmental document for this project, which would be actually a NEPA document. Staff feels that by funding a city project, being our first year in the program, would be a simpler project to go through, and not having to look at the administrative burden to allocate costs to many of the users. Want to note that many of the users that have applied, these are countywide projects, and they've applied to every city and the county for funding for their projects. Like I said, the Morro Bay sidewalk project would serve 100% of the ADA and low-income citizens within Morro Bay, because they all have the potential of using the sidewalk. We will know probably in the fall, August or September, what the final costs or what the final funding amounts are going to be, and we can start the project in approximately September after we've finalized our NEPA clearance. The next step in this process is it goes to the county for their ratifying the city's decision, and then we hold again another public hearing, February 28th, 2012 council meeting, to finalize this funding program. That concludes my staff report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments for Rob? No?
Yeah, just briefly, were there any other projects that you considered besides the accessibility ramps?
It was really the simplest project that we could put together quickly for this application period that does serve all ADA and low-income persons within the city of Morro Bay.
And it's the undone stuff, right?
It is the undone stuff, and it's the installing curb ramps, filling in gap closures. The proposal is to basically start in the downtown and work our way out.
George? Over here. Nancy?
Just wondering, you mentioned the limited time to apply. Was this another one of those short-term things where you didn't get much time to get it done, or... We just didn't get it done, or what
not
happened?
Not particularly short time, but these sidewalk projects are fairly typical of cities using them, because there's not much design involved in them. They're easy to add up all the sidewalk that you need and present that application together, especially for kind of entry-level cities in these programs.
Well, I was just thinking more specifically in terms of the amount of time you had to come up with a project to submit for the grant.
We had probably a couple of months to come up with a project. There are very few projects that we can come up with that would fit the categories, and like I said, these sidewalk gap closures is the simplest project. I can't think of projects in other cities that use this money on their own that have come up with any other types of projects. Perhaps ADA improvements in their buildings they've used the money for.
Thank you.
Anything else? Public hearing. If any of you would like to address council on this item, this would be the appropriate time. Step right up. Whoa. You couldn't help yourself, huh?
Well, the invitation I couldn't refuse, you know. There's a lot of items on the menu, not just fixing the sidewalks up. And, you know, you might want to look at those, too. Thank you.
Thank you, John, for your input. Anyone else? Seeing none, I will bring it back to council. Anything else? Carla?
No, I was going to make a motion.
Do it.
Move approval B3.
And, well, okay, but Rob will shut me up if I start selling it.
Is there any banks loaning money?
We can't discuss it. I'm just.
I think we all heard from the same person.
Do I have your support? Yes. I've got three there. Do I have four?
No.
I have four. Okay, we'll see what happens here. We have a resolution on the books that states that the potential of a Highway 41 Main Street roundabout will never be brought back to council. Is that correct?
It's actually the San Jacinto Main roundabout.
Really?
Yeah.
And whatever happened to the 41, there's no resolution on that one, huh?
There was no resolution that forbidding us to work on that project.
I mean, that's what I'm more interested in, because that's where the traffic problems are. So I will just state it this way, then. I would like to bring back the concept of the roundabout at 41 and Main, which we tried in 03. Where are you on it, George?
Come on, I'm trying to think.
Yeah, see, it's after 9 o'clock.
I'd support it as part of our goal setting and prioritization meeting.
Good. See, you got three of us.
Okay, I'll take that as coming back to the agenda. Is that a support to bring it back on the agenda?
Within the context of the goal setting, it's hard to determine whether we have the time to work on that now.
Agenda. Okay, I've got George and Nancy in support on that.
Mary, just some clarification. Support in the history, support in the concept. What are you looking for? Oh, so support a concept.
Yeah.
Coming back at a general meeting. Not.
Oh, you don't want to do it all over again? The whole thing?
Well, let's see if there's any support on council.
No.
I mean, I see a mixed council here. And,
on for the concept.
Yeah, so we'll just bring it back for discussion and see what happens. And the other one, and maybe I'm going to get corrected on this too, is that I understand we have a resolution on the books that states on waterfront developments that we want to put lease sites together, bigger lease sites. And personally, again, I've got to be careful not to try and sell something, but, you know, I'm not for more big developments down there, more marina squares, more boatyards. I'm for the smaller ones, so I would like to bring that back for discussion on rescinding it. Okay, we have a resolution on the books. Pardon me?
It's actually in the section of our harbor management lease policy states that it's our preference or our desire that when lease sites come up that they should be joined together for future development. So if there's consensus from the council, we can just bring that policy back for a discussion and whether it should be changed or deleted or stay the same.
Thank you, Rob. You saved me. Clear?
I just wonder how many of those sites we got.
Well, we've recently watched one that's been trying to put together. So, anyway, do I have support in this?
Mm-mm.
I'm not going to live or die over this.
Policy.
You like the big ones? Okay, your turn, Noah.
Okay. I would like to schedule a closed session regarding the North Atascadero Beach campground closure and evaluation of alternative options to keep the park and campground open.
Rob won't look up at me. And you know, I get confused when it's closed session. Are you trying to talk?
No, I was going to just...
The property hasn't been offered to the city, but I mean, it certainly could be in closed session because it would deal with real property leases, or it might be a discussion that you can have an open session on whether you just want to pursue that option.
That's my intent. Closed or open, whatever makes the most sense, but I think initiating some dialogue from our end is important because of the time frame that we're looking at.
Okay, dialogue has been initiated.
But within the council, we have not had any discussions.
True enough. We'll bring it back here.
Whatever works.
Okay. Anything else?
The other one was we had a conversation about.
You know, I'm supporting you. We got a third. Go ahead. Sorry.
It came to my attention that you know, with the street trees, and the last round of.
The look on your face, but it's just precious. Go ahead.
Was that? Were you clear? Okay. We got it. That's it.
George? Nancy? Carla?
I have one that I'd like to ask for an information item, and it would be through the police chief. In light of some recent issues in the surrounding communities, I'd like to get an update on Jessica's Law, which went on the books about 4 or 5 years ago, which is about the distance that's prohibited for sex offenders. Our community was mentioned in a recent thing in Santa Maria, so I'd just like to, for an information item, to put that back out there so we're aware of what our ordinance or the laws are pertaining to that.
Are you clear, Chief, what that request is? Cool. I'll support it. Nancy, you got it. Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Yes, getting back to Cerrito Peak. Is there some way we could put into dialogue that maybe this thing could be purchased at some time? Or I'm all voted for him to have his building rights, but I'd like to see this thing...
If there's council support for it, it could be set for a closed session item because that certainly would be real property negotiations.
Nope. I'm not here.
Don't got him.
And Carla.
Okay. Let's schedule it, please, Rob. That'd be closed session. Anything else from council? From staff? We are adjourned.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to everybody.